Another big week for Microsoft. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about Office 2013, how you should download it, what to look for. We'll also have, I think, by the end of the show, the Microsoft's quarterly earnings. Will they take a big loss? We'll find out next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 270, recorded July 19th, 2012. We'll look back and laugh. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to My PC from Citrix. It connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer or your iPad or iPhone. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at gotomypc.com. Use the promo code Windows. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files. Just $59 a year. Try it free at carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything you need to know about Microsoft. And with us are Microsoftians, our experts, not employed by Microsoft or in any way, but experts upon the subject, starting with Paul Thurrott, the editor-in-chief of the WinSuperSite.com site, Windows, the supersite for Windows, WinSuperSite.com, and the author of Windows Phone Secrets and soon-to-be Windows 8 Secrets, coming out when Windows 8 does. Also with us, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. And good to have you, Mary Jo. I want to congratulate you on a successful launch of a brand-new show on our network. Mary Jo is a regular on This Week in Enterprise Tech, which launched
this
week.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was a good first show.
Dang, that was a good show.
It was.
Father Robert Ballister, the host, just was really, I was at home watching it on a 55-inch screen. It looked good. I'm really happy about that. That's Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And it was perfect timing because just before the show went on the air, Microsoft drops a big one. Office 13.
Yeah, that was tricky, actually, because they dropped that news right at the exact same time the show was coming on for This Week in Enterprise Tech. So I'm like, do a little quick talking so that we can delay it a second before we can talk about it legally, you know?
Wow, I didn't even know that was going on. It was impressive because you had that. Yeah. Boy, you had that story. You had the PDFs, everything. So, yep. Wow. And I was just fascinated. Let me just say what, as a normal person, the first takeaway that surprised me but interested me was that Office 2013 saves to the cloud by default. Well,
by default, yeah.
You could still save to your desktop if you ask it to, but by default, you're saving to your SkyDrive.
If you are an Amish person and must use local resources, yes, please, by all means.
That's what it felt like. Like, welcome to the future.
Yeah, people didn't get this when Windows Phone came out. They got very upset. You know, what are cloud accounts? I don't get it. You know, it's like the whole world is going this way. You're going to have to jump on board. It's kind of exciting.
Microsoft more aggressively than anybody else, though, I think. I mean, that's big.
Well, I would say it more aggressively than anyone else who started out as a traditional software company. You know, companies like Google, of course, just have stuff in the cloud. That's how they see the world, or Amazon, you know.
Yeah, that's how they are, and that's what you expect. Yeah. But Microsoft is a desktop software company.
Microsoft
right?
is just, it's amazing. It's been amazing to watch them convert their on-prem service to services and to convert, you know, the most venerable software suite on earth is now delivered as a service over the cloud to your PC in 90 seconds, you know. You can deliver individual applications to someone else's PC if you want, if they don't have Office, if you want to just use Office.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
So that's the other thing. Then I didn't quite grok that at first, and then when I kind of understood it, I blew my mind. Yep. Your copy of Office 2013 is anywhere you are.
Here's the change. When you buy a movie from iTunes, it's associated with your account.
Right.
It's not associated with the PC to which you first downloaded it, right? You're not manually managing that thing anymore. And they're taking that concept and they're applying it to software. So today
that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
In Office 2010, you're buying a thing. And when you install it onto a PC, you're done with it. That's it. Unless you have two licenses, or, you know, a home and student has three licenses. But what you're doing there is associating a product key with a particular piece of hardware. And the thing with Office, which is sort of what I think people like us have been talking about for a long time, but which Microsoft is really embracing, is the notion that Office belongs to you, and that your representative in the online world is, of course, your ID, your Microsoft account, and it's associated with that. And if you use one of these Office subscriptions, which is particularly interesting to me, you get five installs, and you can decommission them. So, you know, the product key doesn't get blown away because you applied it to a certain PC. You can, from the cloud, say, no, this PC is gone. I'm going to use it on this one instead.
You don't even have to do it from that PC.
No, you do not have to uninstall it. You can do it remotely from the cloud.
I mean, really, you only need one, because you don't work on two at a time. So having five is almost gravy. That just kind of makes it easy to move back and forth, I guess.
This is if you do the subscription version, right, which is part of the other big change. And maybe the one big question that we have, because one of the things they'll be doing with this version is, if you want to, you know, you can go into a store and buy something. It may be a disc, it may be a card, it doesn't really matter. But you can buy a single copy of it like we do now. But the way they want you to do this is to subscribe to it through a service. And it's interesting, because even though we don't know what the prices of those services will be, assuming they don't price themselves out of the market, which I don't see happening, I think they've latched onto a model that's finally going to work for software as a subscription service. You know, whereas maybe a year ago, if we had this discussion and I said, hey, you could subscribe to Office 2010 for $10 a month, you know, people would have been like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure that works.
Well, they've
had
Office 365 for a while, and that's how that works, right?
Yeah, but that's a different thing.
That's web-based.
That's email, document, collaboration stuff, communications potentially. This is literally the Office software as part of it.
But this is something you could do with Office 2010 if you were one of those people who wanted to pay for the local software on a subscription basis.
Right.
I mean, they kind of paved the way with some of the things they did in Office 2010. And this is just the realization of, okay, some people do want to buy Office this way and pay on a monthly basis or a yearly basis. And the people I talked to this week, the first question everybody asked me was, so you can still install it locally, right?
They're not taking
that away, are they? And I think they kind of did the best of both worlds this week. They said, don't worry, we're not taking your local copy away if you're one of those people who's not ready for the cloud.
You know what, though? I think those people are going to be won over by and large, because I don't think this is going to be a slow transition. I do believe that for this generation of software, the majority of these things are going to be click-to-run installs, because the benefit of it is going to be so overwhelmingly great that they're just not going to want to do it. Because the way they're going to make it is that the IS or the MSI type install, the type of install you would buy today in a retail store, is going to be a little more expensive. It'll be one PC. Or you could do this thing where you get constant upgrades, you get the next version. Maybe it's $5, $10 a month, whatever they charge for the home version. And it works on five computers. I mean, people can be like, duh. You know, it's going to be such a no-brainer.
I think we're going to, the same people who hated Microsoft dumping Small Business Server are the people who are going to hate the idea of this, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that's a big audience.
It's the way things are going, but yes. You know, it's nice that they gave people an out.
Can you give me, so I understand it, what the choices are for Office 2013?
I know. The naming is so horrible. When I saw the names, I was like, no.
I'll write this down.
So this is actually my combo tip pick. So
save it for your tip pick.
I think the high level thing to say would be, and they did this on purpose just to get people used to this, that as of today, we have this thing called Office 365. It is a business class set of services aimed at taking Microsoft's on-prem service and putting them in the cloud. So you get Exchange, SharePoint, Link. That's all it is. That's not true. If the enterprise version, you can get Office with that as well. But what you're getting with when you get Office through the enterprise version of Exchange is that, you know, the ISO MSI type install. What they're doing going forward is saying, okay, Office 365 is our Office in the cloud. And by the way, I think it's pertinent and important to note that Office 365 doesn't have a version number or a year associated with it, right? Because you're on the subscription cycle, you get it. And if the Office 2016 suite comes out or whatever they call that, you just get it. You don't have to think about it. But they're adding Office to it. In fact, it's particularly notable that the base version of Office 365 going forward will not, in fact, include anything that we now associate with Office 365. So, in fact, you know, right? It's a little strange, but Office Home, I think they're calling it Office 365 Home Premium, assumes that using Microsoft's consumer class email storage and so forth and messaging, meaning Windows Live, what we used to call Windows Live, Hotmail, SkyDrive, and Windows Live Messenger, whatever those things may be called going forward. So that's interesting. It's a big change, and it's funny. So you're telling me that there's a version of Office 365 that's for consumers, and it doesn't include anything that used to be in Office 365, and now you're telling me that this thing that used to come on all these like the last floppy version of Office probably had like 136 floppies in the box.
Yeah.
But now I can deliver that to my desktop from the cloud in 90 seconds. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. It's crazy.
That sounds to me like a lot of the code is still in the cloud, right? We're running stuff from the cloud.
Actually, it's not. Well, after 90 seconds, it is. But what it does, so within 5 minutes, you have all of it. And this installer, it's like what they did with Windows 8. I don't mean technically. I mean conceptually. In that, it is so much faster than its predecessor, it almost doesn't make sense. You know, and by its predecessor, I mean the MSI-based version, you know, the way we used to install Office, the way we still install Office to this day.
I'm on
the consumer preview site.
Yep.
Because I think people probably want to install and follow along.
You can't, Leo. No,
please. By the way, I just want to point out, and this is weird. I don't know when they started doing this. This video embedded on the Microsoft website is on YouTube. It's a YouTube video.
Yeah.
When did they start doing that? How come they don't serve their own videos? They are Microsoft. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just interesting.
Actually, I think it's hilarious to make Google pay for that bandwidth.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and if Office is really successful, it's going to cost Google in two different ways. So
it looks like I download these one by there's Word, PowerPoint, Excel, OneNote, and Outlook.
That is just to learn more. So about those apps.
Okay. Do I sign up?
But click the learn more that's underneath it.
Okay. We're going to walk through this. So learn more. Don't sign up. Click the try it button.
Okay. Click the try it button.
Is that right?
Yeah. Go ahead. It will give you it should give you some columns. Yeah. So.
Okay.
The first one on the left is what I just described, the consumer service.
This is for Home Premium, Office 365 Home Premium.
It does not include Exchange, SharePoint, or Link.
That's fine. Link, though, you might want Link because that's like Skype.
You're going to get Skype. Skype is in the final version of Office. That will be. It's not.
You're going to get, with that SKU, you get 60 minutes of Skype credits per month.
Too. Oh, that's good.
You also get 20 gigabytes of additional SkyDrive storage.
This is great. Okay, that's the home premium. That's the five household PCs. Then there's a small business premium.
Now, so one of the big conceptual differences as you move off of home is that you move into a situation where you have multiple accounts, right?
Yeah.
So on the first one, that's Office 365 for a person. It's one account. You can install it on up to five PCs.
That sounds like what
and
I'm
going to you also get device installs, by the way. And they're not specifying yet how many, but it may not be a hard limit. I'm not sure, but it's going to work the way that it works today with the Zune PC software. Where you associate a number of devices with your account.
Can I have a little sidebar real quick?
Yeah.
None of this is for the Macintosh.
That's not true. So Office for Mac is included in this. It's just that for the customer preview that we have today, it's not really built in. They will.
So I pay one license, I get Windows and Mac?
Yeah, so you could have two copies of Mac, three on Windows.
But I think it's not a new version of Office for Mac, right? Oh. It's Office for Mac 2011.
I don't care. It's still an Office.
Yeah, you don't care.
Yeah, well, eventually I want a new one.
Yeah, but they are going to make a new version for the Mac. So it will include that upgrade when that comes.
I am so happy.
We just don't know when.
I want it for both. And as long as you're doing that, can I have it for the iPad, iPhone, Android phone?
Actually, I have news about that, too. So... You may recall that we had, I think, speculated, or I don't remember how we worded it, but that we've heard, both Mary Jo and I, that Office was coming for iOS and for Android, and that, you know, we're not sure on the timing and how it's going to work and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I have a theory about it, and then I also have some news about it. And the theory is that Microsoft will only deliver the device-based versions of Office through these Office 365 services so that instead of going to, say, the App Store on iTunes – and buying a copy of Office or whatever, or an Office app, you know, similar to the way that Apple sells their iWork apps, and then associating that with your Apple ID, you would instead subscribe to Office 365. And that is part of your Office 365 subscription. You get five copies of Office that you can install on your PCs and Macs, and then some number that you can install on iOS devices and Android devices. Wow. And that's how they get you to keep paying for Office, even though you're using a different platform.
I will pay for this forever. This sounds great.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying.
So you're saying there still will be a local copy of Office for iOS? It'll just be like downloaded to you through Click to Run? Or are you saying there won't be any local install on iPad? If you know.
He froze. He froze solid. He has nothing to say. He's thinking. Wait a minute. Let's let him think.
That was just a bad question.
Let's let him think. He's, click. He's gone. Oh, hey, but I just want to say I am installing this. And when they said 90 seconds, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Right. So what it does is it's streaming it to you. So some of the bits come in first and second.
And those
launch
first.
So you can start, use it right away. Yeah. You know, you can just start. And then the rest of it will stream in.
And you said about 5 minutes. Of course, it depends on bandwidth and everything.
Yeah.
So that literally, I started installing that when Paul was describing the iPad stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was 90 seconds later. Maybe that's why it crashed. I don't know. Then, no, we're in different machines. But I am now running Office. Wow.
This is the customer preview.
When you sign into Office, it's easy to keep your documents safely online. That way they travel with you to all your devices.
This is sounds like a scratch track for the voice.
So it's easy to pick up where
seriously.
And all your great work.
She's not even on mic.
When you need it. Your Office is ready. Let's get started.
Let's move into the mic, lady. Okay.
Yeah.
How would I like my office? Hi, Leo. It knows my name. How would you like your office to look? Calligraphy, circle, and these are themes.
Yep.
Tree rings. What do you like? Clouds, circuit? I'm going to go for
a cloud.
Really?
Everything's about cloud.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you can look at these ahead of time and see. So these are just little patterns that are on there.
Yeah.
All right. Mary Jo
wants
clouds.
Make it more
clouds.
Like your personal office.
Right. And look, there's a little happy face. What's the happy face and the frowny face there for? Just to say whether I'm happy now?
Yeah, I think it's like the old version of Office, the last version, where if you like what it's doing, you say, yes, I like it. Smile.
I like it. Yay. We appreciate your feedback. What did you like?
Yeah. So you're sending feedback to Microsoft, right? Like, yeah, I like that. You can see I like the little squiggly patterns.
Don't you think that they're going to...
Sorry about
that. No, that's okay. I'm installing it. Yeah. By the way, this is what they should do with Windows 8. You know, I know they were debating whether to have video at the beginning of Windows 8 and all that.
Yeah.
I think this is a very nice...
Oh, then you're going to love what they're doing with Windows 8, Leo.
Now, they're getting things ready.
They're also getting things ready in Windows 8.
Well, Office has a lot of great new stuff. We'd love to show you around while we wrap things up. This is while the downloads continue. Now, this is going to happen every time I install it on a new machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it isn't like instant.
Go to your start menu and run Word.
It's there.
So you're already running something. You're already doing it.
I don't have a start menu, Paul.
Question.
What do I do now? Oh, there.
Right. Shut down, Leo. You see how quickly you're running?
Whoa. Okay. This is wild. This is so wild.
That's what I'm saying. It's incredible. And by the way, if you were at someone else's house and you wanted to run this presentation, they didn't have PowerPoint, you could log into Office 365 and you could run it on demand from the web, and it would be that fast.
Now, and there it's put the icons on my Metro desktop. Excel, Publisher, Outlook, Word, PowerPoint, OneNote, Access. Let's go to Word. So I'm launching Word. Office is working hard. We're sorry. WinWord can't be used. It's still downloading it.
That's
seems like it should download Windows.
You know what it does is it tries to optimize based on what you're doing. So the first app you run, it assumes that you want that. And so it will download that first.
I didn't run anything. It just did it.
Oh, just well. You said you wanted to learn more about something, or it ran.
Oh, maybe I clicked a button. Okay.
It doesn't normally run PowerPoint unless you ask for.
Yeah, I didn't really care about PowerPoint. This is nice. because it has my login. This is Windows 8. It's got a little icon of me right there, and it knows my name.
Yep.
What's
multiple
the drop
accounts.
Down? I can have. Yeah. Wow. This is. I could switch accounts. Wow. And that's in PowerPoint.
Right.
You know, right. I'm really liking this. This is really
awesome.
Smart.
No, it really is awesome.
This is very interesting.
There is no way to just download Office or just download Word, right? Like, can you just test one
today?
Of those things? Yeah.
No,
or Outlook.
No, today you cannot download an app or an application. You can download the suite. Mm-hmm. It's the professional. I think it's Professional Plus or Professional Pro or whatever they're calling.
Well, I just click the home thing, but I'm getting whatever I'm getting, right?
Well, my argument, the one I'm making the tip, is that you should do it this way. That anyone who sees this, I mean,
this is great. What a great introduction.
Yeah. Now, if this thing costs $50 a month, my argument ends. But I mean, if it's $5, $10 a month, I think people are going to say, yeah, I'm going to do this.
So they haven't announced pricing.
No, that's the one little asterisk, you know, caveat that we have to make. About this. And Mary Jo, I'm sorry, you had a question about the devices stuff?
Go back to iOS, the iPad.
Yeah.
Are you going to get a local version on the iPad, or do you think it'll just be services? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, but I assume that you will get, based on the way they're talking about it. Mm-hmm. And the reason is Microsoft today supports sideloading of apps on through their Windows Intune service. And that, I believe, is how they're this is now what I'm speculating, but I believe that that's how they're going to do it here. In other words, we don't want you to have to go through the Apple App Store because now you're tying it to their account. We want you to tie it to this account.
Yeah.
We want you to have it through Office 365. Now, I know for it is a fact, in the sense that I've been told this by sources that I trust, I should say, that the iOS apps will be included in Office 365 by the time it ships or sometime after it ships or sometime in the future. Yes. In other words, that is coming. It's not necessarily a fact that this is the I'm speculating that this will, in fact, be the only way that they allow it to be deployed. Because in other words, this way, they ensure that you get on an ongoing subscription with them, and that's the customer relationship. It's between you and Microsoft. They don't want it to be between you and Apple. You know,
a Apple may have something to say about this, however.
Yeah.
Well, they might, but the truth is that I don't know what
they're
doing.
At their peril.
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, if someone were to buy a copy of Microsoft Word for iOS, you know, a future app, and they buy it from the App Store, and it costs them $10. They can use that thing for the rest of their lives on every iPad they ever buy. And you know those goons are going to buy like 10 of them because that's what Apple people do. But that doesn't help Microsoft. They've only sold like the one thing. What Microsoft wants is for you to be paying them for this thing, right? And I think, and again, I'm speculating about the service bit of it, but I think that that's the ideal way to make sure that happens is make this thing so compelling that you can use it, even if you're, look, I'm going to Apple stuff. I just am, you know. I'm going to use Macintoshes. I'm going to use iOS devices, but I need to use Office. Well, you're still a Microsoft customer. We can get you an Office 365. You'll have the latest version of Office for the Mac and for iOS every month for the rest of your life, as long as, you know, for the life of the subscription.
I think it's a much
better deal.
Yeah, like Leo's suggesting, though, I wonder if Apple, like what the terms will be with Apple, because, you know, they want you to buy through the store so they get the cut, right?
They insist on it. You can't do in-app purchases without going through Apple.
Right. So if you do a subscription-based model and you're dealing directly with Microsoft,
can't do
you're
it.
Not going,
they will
right,
not
that's
let
what I'm
you
wondering.
Do that.
How's that going to work, right?
We know because Amazon, for instance, had to take that out of the Kindle. You couldn't even buy books out of the Kindle app on iPad.
But that app is sold through the App Store.
The app is, and they took it out. Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, how do you put an app on?
I don't know. How
iPad
does a business put an app on an iPad? I mean, you can download apps in
only
the App Store today.
Only businesses can do that.
I've tested software on iOS devices that was not in the App Store. You know, that other people delivered to me through a different app. You know, or essentially or whatever. There are ways to get around it. I mean, there are ways to sideload apps. Like, obviously, if Microsoft were to do this, it has to be on the up and up. I mean, they're not a brave company.
Somebody points out that Netflix might be the example. They give you a free app, but you have to pay a monthly fee to stream movies to the Netflix app on the iPad.
There you go.
That would be an analog.
That falls into my theory that the relationship is with Microsoft. In other words, the way they're going to get you, and this is the part I haven't heard explicitly. In other words, and I've actually asked. I try not to ask these kinds of explicit questions, but... Mm-hmm. Will
because
Microsoft
they won't answer. It just pisses them off.
People provide information, and then I try to be nice and accept it, but then sometimes it raises questions. And in this case, I really want to know. It's like, are you going to require them to have Office 365? I think it makes sense, and I think that's the way to make it happen. Yeah. You know, in other words, by the way, putting it through the App Store is a free app, but it requires an Office 365 subscription. I mean, take that, Apple. That's beautiful. Why should Apple get paid for Office? It's ridiculous.
Why should Apple get paid for anything? That's just
exactly.
how they do it.
Whatever. I mean, I'm just. That's beautiful. So, yeah. Again,
no, I think that's the key. I think that's the way to do it. In fact, if you think about the Kindle, you put the Kindle app on there, you go to Amazon to buy stuff, and then it shows up on the Kindle app. That's
and
completely
Apple makes
doable.
It hard for you to do that because they don't let Amazon present their store to you.
In the app. Do it in the app, but you could do it outside of the app.
Yeah. In other words, they could have a link on Office 365. Friggers.
It's actually very simple. The app requires you to log on to your Microsoft SkyDrive account. And when you log on, if you have a license for Office.
Speculation. But I think you can see as we talk our way through it, it makes sense. You know, and I do believe that this is the way it's going to be.
So I want to talk about pricing. We're going to do that in a bit. Boy, this is I'm telling you, I'm still installing. I'm very excited. I held off on installing it until you guys were on because I wanted you to tell me how to do it. Paul always tells me what to do, and I listen.
Jeez.
We did
do
that.
Do not tap the power button, Leo.
What? Tap the power button?
I know it's alluring.
Did you say to tap it? I did actually once. Didn't I shut down in the middle of a show once?
I'm like, no, don't click. And then he's like, shut up.
That was kind of funny. I will not do that this time. Fortunately, the situation is much more sophisticated than it was in those days, and I don't think I could do that.
Shut down the whole
thing. Unless I flip this switch here. I don't know what this does.
We're going to update the tricorder.
Let's take a break. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, lots to talk about. And we'll do more about Office 365. And I do want to query you guys on what you think the pricing should be. I know you don't know what the pricing will be, but what do you think it should be? I'll give you time to think. But while I talk about our good friends at Citrix and a fantastic product for remote access. Now, some of you may say, well, I have remote access. Yeah, you do. You have Citrix remote access. Microsoft licenses RDP from Citrix. These guys are the kings of remote access. And GoToMyPC has some real advantages. First of all, Mac or PC, you can access it from an iPad, an iPhone, an Android device. So it's very flexible. It also uses something called NAT traversal, which means, unlike RDP, you don't have to open a port on the firewall. You don't have to get IT involved at all. You just install it, and it magically works. SSL at all times, so it's very secure. And because every time you use GoToMyPC, it is a cloud service. It's updating. You always have the most recent, most secure version. There is a lot to be said about doing it this way, and I think you ought to try it free. 30 days free when you visit GoToMyPC.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code WINDOWS. 30-day free trial. By the way, now's a good time. You're going to be on vacation soon, I bet you. Paul's going to France. Maybe you just want to go home early, spend some time with the kids at the pool. This is the time to put GoToMyPC on your system. And then, I love this, you don't have to bring a laptop to the pool. Bring an iPad. Bring an iPhone. And your office computer is on it. You could do anything you could do if you're sitting in front of the computer. Send and receive email, run any program, access any network resource. It is the ultimate cloud solution. And, of course, it's from the best business ever in this field. These big guys have been doing it for longer than anybody else. Go to my PC from Citrix. Try it free. 30 days. Go to mypc.com. Click the Try It Free button. And our promo code for this is Windows. Do indeed try it today. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Leo Laporte. Another big week. Microsoft's been this has been a huge year. In fact, you say in your notes, this might even be the biggest announcement of all. Bigger than Surface?
I tweeted that this is Microsoft's Annus Mirabilis.
It is. Their year of miracles. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, they're an older company within the tech industry, obviously. Slow moving. I mean, the next IBM in many ways. It's hard for companies that have been around a long time, being very successful doing one thing, to do anything else. You know,
absolutely.
Microsoft has applied their Windows model to every product they've ever made, and it's only sort of worked sometimes, and oftentimes not worked at all. You know, it's fascinating to me. It was the discussion we had right up front about them taking these products that have been around for a long time and really blending them up and turning them into something new and special. It's very difficult to do that, and it's interesting for me to see Microsoft doing it because, you know, I think this is a company a lot of people expected to drive itself into the ground.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, they have not. In fact, I was very on Twitter on Sunday. I was just saying this is a terribly run company.
For the record, I've been told that by like 1,100.
I know. They go, Paul, there's, you know, I have to say Twitter has become the tattletale network.
Yeah.
If I say something, Paul, did you hear what Leo said? Oh, my God.
Yeah. And as I tell my daughter, who's 10, you know, no one likes a tattletale. But, but you said,
I'll say it. Things like announcing Windows Phone 8. Although I have to say, Andy Yanako talked me down from this one. But announcing Windows Phone 8 when you're not shipping it and then saying, oh, and by the way, if you buy a phone today, it won't be upgraded, seems like, you know, stupid. But Andy convinced me that Microsoft is actually being honest and doing the right thing. Apple would never do that. Apple would stew.
There are two aspects to this. One is that you got to remember that, unfortunately for the Windows Phone guys, they have been, I almost said the victim, they have been the cause of a lot of miscommunications over the past 2 years. And I look at this in some ways as them trying to do that right. In other words, by being honest and doing the right thing.
I give them credit for that. Yes.
I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
The other thing to talk about, though, with regards to Windows Phone 8 is that, I guess I'd have to go back, 2 years now? 2 years ago in February, they announced Windows Phone 7 at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
And then each of the years since, they've done a Mobile World Congress. They have their spring shows where they talk about the updates. And honestly, they've just followed the same pattern that they followed over the past 2 years for these other updates. The only thing that's different between now and last year is that this version is not backwards compatible. So we kind of have to go back to 2010 when they did the same thing with Windows Phone 7, where it wasn't backwards compatible with Windows Mobile. I don't recall anyone arguing 2 years ago that they should never have announced that the way they did, because now Windows Mobile people aren't going to buy phones, or, you know, they're not going to be able to upgrade or whatever. You got to come out and and say what you're doing. I mean, the speculation, I think, was worse than the knowing.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
No, and so I commend them from actually, what I was saying, well, this is bad business, but on the other hand, it's great for consumers, and, you know, they can win some points from consumers by being honest.
I bought a Lumia 900 with my own money. I was out of contract, so it cost me over $400, and I did it full well, knowing that I wouldn't be able to upgrade to Windows Phone 8, and people would write me and say, so, you know, you must know there's an upgrade, that's why you bought it. Like, no.
No, I know there's
actually
not.
I know there isn't, and more important, I think this phone is good, really good.
Right.
I love this phone. I prefer it to the iPhone, and so far to every Android phone I've tried too. I mean, so to me it was fine. I mean, listen, I do a different thing than other people. People now are coming to me saying, look, I can get a Lumia 900 now for $50. Should I do it? And it's like, look, I can't answer that for you.
Right.
You know, I mean, because for me, I'm going to be getting a new Windows Phone 8 phone regardless. I don't care how much it costs. This is what I do for a living.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, this is not the same as a normal person.
It's yes. And that decision is personal. I mean, that's up to you.
Right.
I would just make the argument that in the case of the phone specifically,
it's a good phone.
Lumia 900 is a good phone.
It's a good phone. And it stands on its own.
It's going to be a good phone a year from now. It just is.
Anyway. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sidetrack.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, we should go back to the crazy stuff that you said on Twitter last week. So
that was one of them.
No, I don't actually. The worst run company. I think you said something about.
It looks like the worst run company since RIM at this point.
Yeah,
can I modify this, because I'm so impressed with this Office announcement.
Yeah.
That this was done. I haven't spent a long time with it, but this seems like it's done right in every respect. I'm very worried about Windows 8.
Yeah, but you know what? You can't. Okay, let's hold off on Windows 8 because I think that's a bigger topic. As far as the way the company's run, I think Mary Jo would agree that if looking out over the past 10 years, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that maybe Windows Phone isn't as well run. Or, sorry, Microsoft isn't as well run as maybe as it could have been. You know, and that if we're going to argue today in 2012 that Microsoft's coming up with a new Xbox, they got Windows 8 coming, they got Office 2012 coming, 2013 rather, they've got, you know, new Visual Studio, they got all the new server stuff, all the new online services. You know, like, this was their master plan, that we're going to do nothing for 8 years straight and surprise the hell out of
them. And then, look!
that's not a strategy. Like, that's a, you know, that's
but
you
fixing. Do you remember, it was like a year ago when, I forget who wrote this, but Microsoft said, you know what, Steve Ballmer's admitting he took his eye off the ball. And he's going back to really looking at the product groups and focusing on the products. And you know, whether that was just posturing or whether that was for real, it's been a year when Microsoft really did kind of get its act together. And, you know, it took years for this to be all set up, right? Like a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they've changed everything. Well, Office has been in development for 3 years, this new Office.
Yeah, right. So, right. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
This isn't someone walked in, slammed the door and said, we got to change.
No.
I mean, this takes you can't turn around the Titanic. I mean, it takes a while.
Right.
I actually, Leo, this will maybe surprise you, but and it may be surprised and hurt other people. But I agree that, unfortunately, I like Steve Ballmer, actually. But clearly the company has been mismanaged somewhat. And it goes back to that comment someone made, maybe me, my memory's so bad, at the beginning of the show where, you know, it's hard to change. Microsoft was very successful. Yeah, I actually said this. I'm quoting myself. So Microsoft, you know, it was very successful with Windows and then tried to duplicate that success in everything else they did. That was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And you can look at not just like broad strategy, but the first version of Windows CE, where it looked exactly like Windows 95, because people know and love the Windows 95 interface. So they're going to know and love it on this thing, you know, and then they sold 8 copies and life moved on. I mean, that's not the way the world works. And so I think it just took them a while. It's Microsoft came of age during a certain era of technology. The rise of personal computing, and now it's accelerating and it's moving in new directions. And so, to be honest, IBM at this point in their history with the PC world was selling their PC business off to another company and moving on. Microsoft is adapting to the world of highly mobile computing devices, I should say, and obviously pervasive connectivity and all the internet services and everything. And we'll see how they do. I don't think it's going to be Microsoft and then everyone else. I've often said I think the future of computing is going to be more of a mishmash of different companies and platforms and so forth. But we have to give them some credit for, trying and appearing to be turning it around. We'll see how they do. But these are bold. All of these things are bold steps, I think.
There's no question. And I've said this over and over again. It's very bold.
Yeah.
And probably necessarily bold. I don't think.
Right. You don't see RIM doing that. You didn't see IBM doing that.
Right.
You know, say whenever that was 10, 8 years ago.
It's risky. It's with boldness comes risk.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that's why I think. Now, it doesn't mean that they are have been well run for the past decade, right? I mean, I don't think that the CEO or the direction of the company can explain why their stock sat still for 10 years straight or whatever. I mean, these are things. I'm not a magician, Leo. I can't explain everything, but it's...
Well, I can explain it. I think the stock market shared my opinion, which was that they were not impressed by what Microsoft
was doing.
Well,
they were no longer
a growth
stock.
It looked like a middleware company. It wasn't a growth stock.
There you go. Right. And maybe that speaks to what Mary Jo was talking about, where...
Fine enterprise company, but nothing wrong with it. Solid, rock solid.
And here they are making a bid to be a fine consumer-oriented company as well. We'll see.
I think I'm a chess player, so I think in terms of chess. There's a risk-reward, right? Now, sometimes the best thing to do would be be content and say, hey, we're really happy being an enterprise company that's rock solid, that's dependable, that dominates the market, and we're going to make lots of money. We are already. We'll continue to make. And let's not take a chance. That's one way to do it. And then the other way to do it is to take a big chance and say, hey, we want to be big in consumer too.
Mm. Look at how they announced Office this week. This is like a perfect example of this, right? Almost all of what they talked about for Office, the next generation of Office, the new Office, whatever you want to call it, was consumer focused.
I'm doing the walkthrough. Insert online pictures and video. This is in a Word document. There's a button for online video. I could search Bing. I can use a video embed code. I can insert from YouTube. So I could say, you know, if I want to insert a picture of ducks into my Word document, this is how easy it is. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Back to Office. I want to go back to Office.
Okay. Well, this is Office. I'm just saying. This is very consumer-y.
Wait, Mary Jo, look at the duck.
Look at the ducks, Mary Jo.
Enjoy the ducks.
No, but I'm just saying, this is not a business use.
No, right.
No,
exactly.
It's not.
But you know what? There was so much stuff they didn't talk about in that one-hour press conference this week that was for businesses. Like, you didn't hear them talk at all about the new version of Exchange. SharePoint, Link. I mean, there's tons of stuff they didn't mention at all. And the old Microsoft would have said, hey, guys, we have this new version of Exchange. Look at all these new, like, mini sub features of it. But this is the new Microsoft. And so their idea is, let's make it a consumer launch. Let's talk about the consumer thing. And then, you know what? We're going to put a few blog posts out about what's new in SharePoint.
By the way, they arguably skewed too far in that direction because all of the news stories I saw about this was Microsoft makes the touch version of Office.
Yep.
Because all they did was show off like the touch interface.
Yep.
And it was like, guys, seriously, nobody has that computer. I don't know why you keep showing it on a like a tablet. That's crazy. But I think they were really trying to – it's funny how they really went against the grain, because Office obviously sells very well with enterprises and businesses. People use it on normal computers. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. It's going to be consumers. It's going to be tablets. And, you know, it's a very bold way to do it.
And
we're not going to talk about SharePoint or Exchange or anything. It was very strange, you know.
Yeah.
It was so strange that a lot of my email was like, well, they didn't, you know, was Access part of this? They didn't even mention Access. Or it was, you know, people would ask about the stuff they didn't talk about.
Yep.
You know, that's all that, you know, that was all. Or am I going to be able to install this normally? I mean, what is this? Yeah. Does this thing work if I'm not online? You know, people really misunderstood a lot of it.
This is, and I thought, I have to say, I am really impressed by this, just playing with it.
Yeah.
Now, Ars Technica said the touch interface is, no, I'm not using touch. I'm using a mouse and a.
Yeah, Peter said this.
Yeah. So what do you think? They said the touch interface wasn't so hot.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So first of all, Peter is a good guy and a smart guy, and I would listen to what he has to say about this. I do have one of these touch tablets. I don't see touch as the primary use case here. I think even if these touch devices are extremely popular, and even if people use Office on them, that for creating content, for the most part, people are going to use a regular keyboard. It's Office. Like, I'm sorry, you know. You can screw around with the DNA all you want, but this thing is still Office. I think where the touch interfaces come into play is going to be more in the consumption stuff, and they've made smaller jumps in those areas. So, for example, Microsoft Word has it's had one actually before, but it has an improved read mode, which works very nice and adapts to the layout.
I love it, by the way. I just played with it. Yeah, that's one of the four features they demonstrate in the original. Yeah.
But the other thing you could do, you can use that to read PDFs.
Right.
And so that's very interesting. And suddenly Word becomes not just a productivity application, but kind of a consumption application, a reading application.
Right.
I think that the touch stuff is going to make more sense. I don't think we're going to see a lot of people doing presentations on a touch machine and touching to advance slides and stuff, even though they demonstrated that. I mean,
that's in response to the iPad, where people do that.
But they won't do it primarily because they won't have to on a Windows PC. So I picture, you know, I'm not an Excel guy, but I know people who are. And I could picture an Excel guy sitting down in front of the TV at night with his tablet and touching a cell and having something come up, and he, you know, taps on the screen. And you play with numbers. You play with figures and charts, and you play with the presentation.
Right. I could see that happening. Yeah.
I could see that. Now, is he going to create the workbook, a spreadsheet, whatever they call it, using his tablet that way? Probably not. You know, probably not. He could, of course. But I don't think most people are going to do things that way. One of the things, by the way, that I'll give another, further kudos to the Office team, they do a much better job than Windows does of adapting to the device type. And so if you use it on a smaller screen device with touch, you know, the ribbon will be minimized, the touch mode will be on, the elements will be bigger. You know, it does these kinds of things fairly automatically, not always, but in a better mode than Windows. I mean, one of the things I've argued for Windows 8, and I know why they don't do it, but I still feel that Windows 8 should come up, examine your computer, make a decision, or ask you
it's supposed to fill them all in, and it's not doing it. Type Nancy. Well, type. Okay, let me try again. M-A-R-I-Y-A. It says type, repeat in cell 6, and watch, you're done. Isn't it supposed to fill those?
No. Okay. I think you're hitting the wrong key.
Oh. What? I'm hitting the wrong key. Okay, I type Steven.
Yeah.
Now,
just click the next cell. That should work.
Okay, next. It's all right.
All right.
That's fine. It's, you know, it's a beta.
By the way, that's an interesting one that you're trying to do, because that is their one demo.
The autofill.
That feature. It's this auto, you know, it's that exact thing where you have email addresses that are separated by a period.
Right.
And it's like, okay, is there anything else a flash fill does other than separate email names out? I mean, it seems like there should be a different use for this. I'd like to see a better use for this than this, but
yeah,
a tab. I don't know. No.
I think it's because I'm not typing. I don't know.
But again, you know, this week's theme from them was you want to use this on a tablet, especially on Windows 8, because it's going to light up best on Windows 8. And
I'm using it on Windows 8 right now. Now, this is not a Metro app. I mean, it shows up in the, you know, here in the Metro start box.
Well, all apps do.
As all apps do, right. But it, and it's full screen, but it's on a desktop, right? So if I minimize.
I think a lot of people don't get this distinction, which is actually pretty important. You know, these Office apps are desktop apps.
Right.
They're Win32 apps, right? And Microsoft did talk about two sample Metro.
Wait a minute, 32 or 64?
Both. Either one. Yeah.
Okay. 32/64. Got but they did talk about two Metro style apps. So these are apps that won't run in the desktop that will run on Windows RT tablets. And they said they're going to have OneNote, which they do have now available to testers. I think Paul even reviewed it. And there's a Link client also that isn't available yet, but that's going to be Metro style as well. So they're showing you kind of the future, I think, like saying some of the Office apps, if not all, in the coming releases will be Metro style, but these ones are not. These are desktop apps.
Right. The OneNote one is very interesting. What you're running here is just the regular OneNote application, but actually, if you want to, why don't you go back to the Start menu.
All right. Let's close that out. Go back to
and
Start.
And go to Windows Store. It's just kind of the green one in the middle
there. I can buy or download.
You can just download it for free.
A special copy.
Search wasn't working before, but it might be working now. But regardless, you could just scroll over to the productivity section.
Social, entertainment, photo, sports. Boy, they really deprecate productivity.
It's in there somewhere.
Lifestyle, shopping, travel, finance, productivity. Quick note. Is that what you're talking about? Quick note?
Nope.
Back.
Just click on the productivity heading.
Shoot.
Jeez.
Okay, one more time. Let's just go right over to productivity. There we go. Okay, click the heading.
On the word.
Click the word. And OneNote MX. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. It'll just be called OneNote eventually, but this is the Metro-style version of OneNote.
Is that what MX means, is Metro?
I think it means Metro Experience. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so that's good to know. So it's installing that right here, and it puts a little purple tile on the desktop there. I'm sorry, on the Metro Start page.
So this is just a Metro style view of the same web-based.
And that's the beauty of this. If I save that to SkyDrive, it
and
just show up, and it will because it's automatic. It just shows up everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's neat.
Yep. And
liking that. I mean, it's transparent to the user, I think.
But you should run the app because one of the big issues with these Metro style apps is that it's got kind of a Fisher Price type UI where you have very minimal amounts of user interface and very few places where you can have a sophisticated looking UI. And these guys have actually kind of gotten around that. And
use Express settings. Okay, it's just setting it up now. Searching for notebooks.
And I think what they've done here is a glimpse at how they intend to do Office
Metro.
Metro, yeah. It's very interesting and very effective, I think.
It's still setting
and
up.
Very slow.
So let me ask you. It's the first load. Yeah. So that's fine. Let me ask you about pricing. What would you like to see? Oh, you know what? This is right. This is exactly what the OneNote looked like in the desktop version.
All right, so see that little round thing up in the corner, the right corner?
Yeah, what is that?
Like, tap that.
Ooh.
So it opens this radial menu. And then imagine you were doing this with your finger, but as you kind of mouse around the outside edge, you can choose one of the things. So choose like the picture one or whatever.
Okay.
Just click on that bar there, yep. Okay. And now you get picture options, right? So I believe what that will do, if you click the picture icon.
Let's do it again. This much easier with a thumb.
Yeah. So this is designed for touch, and hopefully you just crash the application. It's allowing you to find a picture. So this is an interface for inserting
pictures.
A photo.
Yeah.
Right? Now, so do something else, though. So now go just select some of the text that's over on the side, anywhere, in the document.
Take some text, yeah.
Select it. Now see, you get another one of those little gidget things.
Right? There's a little gidget on the right.
Now
so this is how they're going to do controls. They're going to do a radial dial.
Yeah. Now think about this for a second. It's very interesting, actually. The ribbon interface has been lauded because it is more discoverable. It makes features more readily discoverable. But the problem with the ribbon interface is that it's kind of big, and it's always on the screen, right? You can't really get rid of it. But this thing is context sensitive.
This is
and
great.
And so what this Yeah, it shows you only what you need based on what you're doing. And
now,
actually, I'm curious.
Now, this comes from, there's been iPad apps, but desktop apps, a couple of that reminds me of ArtRage. Some of the art programs do these radial menus. And I saw that, and I've seen this in Prezi, which is a presentation, web-based presentation manager uses these radial menus. And I think it's very effective. And I think for touch, this is actually a good way to do it, I think.
Yeah.
These were a leaked feature. Do you remember that, Paul? Like when people started talking about Office 15, people were saying there's this weird dial thing. It looks like a radio.
They must have been just testing it in a Win32 app just so they could develop it. You know,
I'm impressed. And by the way, in OneNote MX, because I've signed into SkyDrive, our Windows Weekly notes.
Yes, it's just there. Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, it's really neat. I think it's a good idea, and Now, I need to spend some time with this to determine if it's truly a good idea or if it just looks like it's a good idea. But
what it reminds me of is
think about how on the iPhone, if you're reading an email app or a Twitter feed, and what you want to do is refresh the view. And there's this new way of doing it that kind of has become common. And people take their phone and they pull down on a list and it refreshes, right? You've seen this in hundreds of apps probably.
Right.
Sometimes things like this happen where people look at that and they say, yeah, this is the way it should be. Even though it's not something maybe you would think to do initially, it just becomes the way things are done. And I wonder if this radial menu is going to become the way complex productivity apps are done on a touch-based system, where it didn't seem like it would be possible to turn this activity center that I would give a two-year-old into the control panel for a jumbo jet, you know, but that they have found a way, you know, and I'm intrigued by this. So we'll see if this thing is picked up in other places.
Well, it truly is the challenge of all this. And it's one of the things that Apple did very well with the iPad. And you see two-year-olds use iPads intuitively and naturally all the time.
And thanks to Microsoft, Leo, you'll see two-year-olds flying jumbo jets across the ocean. It's a brave new world.
Oh, wow. This is a big day. All right. So price. We got to talk price. And then I'm going to take a break. So what do you think? What would be the right price?
Too much?
Yeah. $99 a month out. $50 out. $25 a month out, right?
Yep.
$10 a month? I'd pay that.
$10, well, I think, is the...
I was going to say, what they do now for $20 a month for Office 365, you get the Office Professional Plus apps, and you get everything like Exchange, SharePoint, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
so that's
But you know what else you get with that is guaranteed uptime.
Right.
And you don't get that with Office 365 because it's for home premium, because it's on SkyDrive. So I think the way to look at it is today, the lowest end version of Office 365 for individuals and small businesses, the small business version, is $6 per user per month. Now, it doesn't come with a copy of Office today, but it does come with the, you know, Exchange, SharePoint, and I think Link. Yes, and Link services. And so, I mean, if they could make this thing $6 a month, this becomes no-brainer territory, right? $10 a month, I think we're still right there. I mean, once you get up past 10, we'd have to really do some justifying, and we'll see, you know, at that point. But I think 10 or under, if they could ever get it in there.
But why not? I mean, how much does it cost them if they do the math?
That's the other thing to think about. So today, most people do not buy Office, right? Most people will get it with a computer. Right. A new version will come out. I mean, individuals, right?
What's the OEM license fee to put Office
But how much does it cost? I looked this up. So you can go to MicrostoreStore.com, and you can look and see how much they charge you right now. So there's a home and student version that comes in one or three license versions. There's a home and business version or home business version that probably costs a couple $100. There's a, you know, professional plus that goes up from there, and $300, $400, $500, $600, you know, gets expensive. Those software versions are all available in one or two licenses, right? Where the second license obviously costs you more money. So I don't know if the average Office user was not paying for Office every other time or every third time, you know, how many months at $10 a month does it have to add up before it actually makes sense? It's actually not that bad. You know, $10 a month for 2 years is $240. That's, I believe, a little bit less than it costs right now to buy the home and I should be looking it up, but it's like home business or home and business version, whatever they call it.
Home premium, so, do you mean the new home premium or no?
No, I'm talking about the old versions, the ones they have today. Like, in other words, if you go and say, how much does Microsoft cost? Let's go look. Right. Home and business 2010 is $200. So If Microsoft could sell you a version of this that only works on one PC that costs $200, or they'll sell you a version that works on up to two PCs for $280. If I paid them $10 a month for 2 years, that would be $240, but it would work on up to five PCs. But I think they're making a realization or a recognition.
Recognition
of the fact, at least I realized it was wrong as I said it, that the world is changing and that they need to change the way they license.
Well, they have to compete with piracy. This is not piratable. So what is the fraction of that $280 they lose to piracy?
And $10 a month. Yeah.
I bet you that they're losing more than 30 or 40% to piracy. So this eliminates piracy.
Yep.
Increases, so that brings that margin back up. And it's a lot easier. The other thing to think about is it's a lot easier for a consumer to spend $10 a month, as we know from cell phones, than $240 in 2 years.
Now, as we say this, there are people who literally just got a chili up their back, like the shudder you get through your body. Because what they're thinking, because you hear this whenever you talk about subscription, anything, music, whatever, you know, they want to own it, you know.
I think that's going away. That's an old argument. That's the iTunes argument.
I know, but you know, I'm just saying it's happening, and I agree with you. But I think if they do this in a silly enough way that we're going to look back, if we could, we're going to go to that Wayback Machine, and we're going to look at the MicrostoreStore.com page for Office 2010, and we're going to say, did we really ever buy things like this?
Right.
I mean, I think the way, if you were to buy Office right now, 2010 version, this is so antiquated and so out of touch with the way the world is going. We're going to look back and laugh at this. I think that's how big this is.
Love it.
I really do.
Love it. We'll look back and we will laugh.
It's so good. It's a tough thing when you're selling software upgrades, you know?
But
it's
by
so
the way, I don't
it
think
makes Office 2010 look like crap.
By the way, it won't be $10 because it'll be $7.50. It'll be $7.49 because I think $10 is what leaps to mind. And that's a little much, but a little under 10. You know, you pay $10 a month for Hulu Plus. You pay $10 a month for $7 for
Hulu. $9 for Netflix, right?
I think it's $7 now.
$7.
$7.99, $8.
Well, like I said, Office 365 right now is $6 per user per month. You know, Windows Intune is $10 per user per month. This is for consumers. You know, I think it's going to be right in there. I think that's the...
If you use Office, this is a compelling product.
It's not just compelling. It makes what you're doing now look stupid. Like it's
well, especially, you know, since it's always up to date, right?
It's it's for five computers,
and it's
biggest wingnut in the world is going to look at this and say, I need to get this.
Now, five computers means for a family you buy one license, right?
Well, see, this is the other question. So we don't know,
right?
So you could say anyone could do this. I'm not saying this is legal or even recommended, but these things are associated with a user account. So one of the things I've done on my own, like the Apple devices that I used to use, you know, you have one account, you buy an app, it works on all the devices. So my kid can play it on her iPod Touch. My other kid can play it on his iPad. You don't buy three copies of the app. You buy one copy because it's associated with an account. There's no reason to believe that someone couldn't have a central account that they would use for their family, buy one copy and put it on all five of their computers. The kid uses it, the other kid uses it, his wife uses it, whatever. Now, we know that Office is kind of set up automatically to work with that online account and that version of SkyDrive, but you can change that. You can change the default. It doesn't have to work to that. You can turn it off. There's nothing to stop you from doing this, I'm at least that we can see so far. So, it's one of those weird software gray areas, sort of like TechNet, I guess, but I don't think there's going to be any reason why families can't use this way. And we'll see.
Now,
what
one thing you know for sure, though, I can't. I have 20 employees. I can't buy four licenses.
Except that what you could do, Leo, is buy the small business version of Office 365, which will cost more per month, but will give you that flexibility. And I believe you'll get the ability to. I think it's going to be five PCs per employee on those plans. So that's the multi
home and user work.
Person. Well, small laptop. Business. They're literally calling it. It's whatever five computers you want for each user, I believe.
It's very bold. It's very interesting. When will they? When is this out?
No, never, Leo. This is never coming out.
Actually, I think we might have a date. We'll have a date to talk about. I don't know if this is the same date. We'll have a date to talk about when we come back. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Very interesting. As last couple of months it's been
for
Windows Weekly.
You know, have we talked? We haven't talked through all of your anti-Microsoft insanity from last week.
Oh, let's just forget that.
No, I did want to talk to you about Windows 8, though. I was curious what you wanted to, what you had said about that.
One does not know what the reaction is going to be. It is very bold, as I've said many times, and I commend Microsoft for reimagining Windows, but boy, is that a gutty move. And I have to say, I do not think the response will be positive.
So let me throw
it. It may be the greatest howl of all time.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, so.
Small planet just disappeared.
Imploded.
Itself. Screams. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Superman was born of such an event. But,
true. So,
this past spring, I did a talk at a local user group about Windows 8 for businesses. And I didn't go into it as in a comedic sense. I mean, but I was curious to see how well this thing would shape up. But the thing I came to was that most people who are current Windows users, especially enthusiasts, IT pros, people who support Windows, look at the start screen and the Metro stuff and they get nervous immediately. And yeah. it makes them lose sight of everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
And that they see that, they kind of pee themselves a little bit, and then they stop paying attention. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And what they don't hear in the wake of that is all of the other awesome stuff that's in Windows 8 that actually does benefit the desktop. And the one thing I would just remind people is that in using Windows 8 every single day on my own huge desktop tower computer here, the big screen, I use the desktop every day. I never go into Metro apps, almost ever. I don't have to. But this thing is still a better version of Windows than Windows 7, even when you just factor in just the desktop stuff. There's still so much more better stuff in this that I would make the argument that this thing is to Windows 7 a bigger upgrade from Windows 7 than even 7 was from Vista, just looking at the desktop stuff.
And so, you know what, Paul? They've done a terrible job at telling people
communicating that. This. Yeah. Well, because like the Office guys the other day, they're trying to jam this down people's throats because they know that people will not be receptive to it. Right? I mean, it's a tough situation to be in because they really do have an awesome desktop story to tell with this version. Yeah. They really do.
I feel like they've done none of that. Like I say to them all the time, like, what? So if you're just an average user and you don't care about Metro and you really don't care about using this on a touch tablet, why should you upgrade from Windows 7 or even Vista or XP to Windows 8? And you never get an answer to that. And that's something they need to really be pushing so that people see why that is a good idea or why that could be a good idea. I'm totally not sold on it. Like I keep saying, I'm not going to upgrade this PC to it.
Yeah, I think part of it too is their realization, and it is a very true thing to say that, you know, businesses just aren't going to upgrade to this version. And it's not because of Metro. It's because they were never going to upgrade to Windows 8 anyway.
Yeah.
In some ways, the timing on this is perfect because if they're going to make this major change to the user experience, why not do it on the version of Windows that businesses were never going to buy anyway? So that was actually good timing. And you know, and again, I think the other part of it is just this realization too, that they need to really pump hard on the new stuff because otherwise if they did too much on the desktop, I think people would just, they wouldn't pay attention, you know, to the new stuff. Yeah. So it's a tough thing. So I guess all I'm saying, Leo, is I hear you and there is going to be some confusion about it. Like you talked about the video in the beginning and there is going to be something like that in Windows 8 and they need to have something like that.
They need to do that. Yeah.
That thing will be tailored to the type of device it's on. So if you have a mouse with a keyboard, you'll get a certain little video. And if you have one with a touchscreen, you get a different video, whatever. But the point is people are going to be confused and there are going to be phone calls and there are going to be, you know, there is going to be that stuff. And that's why a lot of what I write is like, you know, if you just learn one keyboard combination, you got to remember this one because this will get you out of anything, you know, that kind of thing. Because people are going to hit these screens and say, how do I get out of this again? You know, it's not obvious. But, you know, people are maybe smarter than software makers give them credit for in some ways. You know, people.
That's where you and I disagree.
Well, no, hold on.
That really is the fundamental question.
But hold on a second.
How smart are people?
Well, I think you'll agree with what I have to say about that, though, in some ways. In other words, I talked about how 15, 20 years ago, Microsoft melded the Windows 95 OS onto small devices, right? And how maybe that was
terrible.
Wrong.
Big mistake.
People today have proven that they can pick up an Android phone, they can pick up a Windows computer, they can pick up a digital camera, an Amazon e-book reader, an iOS, like an iPad device, and those things there's no real similarity between any of those, and they use all of them.
Right.
And so, you know, if someone can use an iPad and a Windows 90, I almost said Windows 98 computer, an iPad and a Windows 7 computer, why can't they use Windows 8? I mean, it's...
Well, that's the fundamental question. And, you know, what you're getting is pure opinion on my part, but my gut opinion is that this is too dramatic of a change, especially for Windows users, certainly, and Mary Jo agrees, for business, but even for end users, and that they will, in fact, be bewildered by it and reject it. That's my opinion. But it's pure opinion, and we won't know.
It is, right. And my reaction to that would be pure opinion as well. I guess I would just say that, you know, that's absolutely one of the outcomes.
Yeah. And the other outcome it will be a revolution, foolish. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's like the scene from Major League. You remember this baseball movie, this excellent,
perfect baseball
movie?
Yes.
You know, the Yankees hit the home run against their team, and the thing goes sailing over the stadium, and one of the fans in the outfield says, it's too high. You know, what do you mean it's too high?
Too high. It's like, no, doesn't count.
They talk about it for 10 minutes. Like, what does too high mean?
There's this invisible bat.
It can hit the moon. How could it be too high? It's a home run.
No, it's too high. So, I commend them because this is a very gutsy move. There's no, we all agree on that.
Yes.
And they did what, as I said earlier, they had a choice. They could have said, well, we'll be a middleware enterprise company and be happy and make billions of dollars a year and be happy.
I'm so glad that, I just want to say, just speaking personally, I'm not suicidal. I wouldn't have killed myself. But I mean, that would have been the most horrific possible outcome for me.
No, I agree. Me too.
I just could not
You'd
care
less. You'd be CIAS stuff. Sitting on this ball.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love it. What's going on in Windows this week, Paul?
From our point of view as tech journalists, it couldn't have made a better decision. I mean, it's great.
Oh, this year has been, this has been
great.
The greatest.
I'm really happy. I agree.
I have to go back to like the early days of Longhorn before that all fell apart to find anything close to this. I mean, and you know what's great about this is this is everything, right? It's Windows and Server and Office and Services and Xbox and what used to be Windows Live. And there's just all of it. It's just so it's an explosion of new, you know?
It's getting all over me.
I'm engorged on the side of it like a
like a tick. Paul the Tick. The ride. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back. We do have some dates, and I'm wondering if these will, we'll see. Let's talk. Let's talk, okay. Shall we? But first, a word from Carbonite.com, the best backup solution out there because it does what backup ought to do. Automatic, absolutely important. If you have to think about it, you won't. Or you'll think about it sporadically, and it won't get done. And, of course, the hard drive will die. Your system will burn. Your house will fall down the one time you forgot to back up. So don't. Just automatic. Number two, continuous. Now, I like that because that means every time you make a change to a document, automatically backed up. That's kind of why Microsoft's using SkyDrive for Word. I mean, it just makes sense, right? Always, always up to date. And by the way, like SkyDrive, Carbonite is in the cloud. It's really important that no matter what your backup strategy, you can have a local hard drive you're always syncing up to. That's great. I encourage you to do that. But you got to have it in the cloud. I was just talking to a friend of mine whose house burned to the ground in that recent fire in Colorado 3 weeks ago. She lost everything, including not only her computer, but all those local backups. I didn't even have the heart to say, I hope you had Carbonite. But I hope you have Carbonite because you never know when the worst is going to happen. This is affordable backup, $59 a year for a computer, everything on a computer, less than $5 a month. And if you have a small business, they've got plans for that, external drives, NAS, everything, they've got plans for that. Just visit Carbonite.com. Check them out, Mac or PC. Use the offer code Windows. You can try this free for 2 weeks, no credit card. You're not going to give them any information, just the word Windows. And if you do that, and at the end of the 2 weeks, and by the way, that's usually enough, depending on your bandwidth and how much data you have, to do a full, complete set for free. Now it's just backing in just a little bit at a time, backing up the changes you make. And you get 2 free months if you use the offer code Windows when you buy. So 14 months for the price of 12. Really great service. Great people. I'm very proud of them. They moved their support people to New Hampshire. Now, they weren't in New England, but they were in India, I think. They had offshore support briefly, and they realized they weren't giving people the superb support that they wanted to give them. So they hired all U.S. Support team. Really great. Really know their stuff. It is a great company. Carbonite.com. Offer code is Windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo, you're in Portland.
I am.
What are you doing there?
Maine or Oregon?
Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, I was out here just visiting Seattle, and I found out there was the open source conference here this week.
I think you found beer.
I've been also doing a little beer research, perhaps.
I know what you found.
I have the wrong career. I need for beer research to be something I can say with a straight face. You know?
Mary Jo, why don't you write for beer magazines? You should have. You know what? You really should have a beer newsletter. That would be huge.
The future, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, huge.
It definitely. I'm very interested in it.
Or, as Hellcat M says in our chat room, just open a tavern.
Exactly.
Mary Jo's cheers.
You know, it was so funny. So I go to the opening night of the open source conference, and I'm walking around, and a guy comes running up to me, and he's like, "You're the chick on Windows Weekly."
Oh dear!
Right?
Oh dear!
No, it was cool. It was funny, and he was a Ubuntu guy, and then the Fedora guy came over, and they're huge fans of Windows Weekly, like real fans. Not
isn't that great?
Yeah, I mean, they're like, you guys, at least you guys give an honest opinion of what Microsoft's doing right and wrong. So it was nice to hear that from some Linux guys, you know?
Yeah.
I often refer to you as the chick on Windows.
Chick. I don't know. To be fair, I don't know if the guy said chick, but he did give me this, if you can see it. Can you see this?
Well, it's a hot dog. What is it?
Yeah, it's like the Fedora logo with the hot dog and the mustard. So
it kind of looks like a penis in a bun. I hate to tell you that.
I'm sorry. The Fedora logo is a hot dog.
I thought it was is the hot dog wearing a hat?
The hot dog is not wearing a hat.
Okay, I don't want to see it again. Thank you.
And I hate to say this, but we have our podcast.
It came out. I just shouldn't have said that, but it just popped out. Well, so to speak, but because I was looking at it.
Going to hell for that.
That can't be their logo.
It's something with the Fedora project with a hot dog with mustard. Ask the chat room. They must know what this is, even though they're a Windows crowd.
Well, we love OSCON, and we've talked to the OSCON people, and it's a great conference. I'm really glad you went to it.
Yeah, and tomorrow, Scott Hanselman's speaking about Microsoft and open source.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, I like Scott a lot.
So does Scott.
Paul has opinions about everything.
I love Scott.
Wow.
There are people I have to just, you know, like Scoble falls into that category.
Yeah, yeah. You love to hate him. You hate him and love him.
No, I just love him. I love to dig it.
Yeah, I dig at Scoble all the time, and he's one of my oldest friends. I've known him for 25 years.
He knows it comes from a place of love.
Of love. This deep love.
So, rubbing my eyes. Do I see a date for Windows 8?
I know. How about that?
General availability. By the way, isn't Surface tied to this as well?
Yes.
So this is, and is Office tied to this as well?
No.
Oh.
Not so much.
So October, can I say it?
Sure.
Yes.
26th. That's the whisper date, you call it.
No, that's the real date. That one's the real date.
This is from the horse's mouth or the hot dog's mouth?
That's from Steven Sinofsky.
Actually, it was from Brandon LeBlanc's mouth, so yeah, sort of.
October 26th.
Steven Sinofsky in a hot dog costume, yes.
And they are done with Windows 8, you say. Done. The only debate is over the... Now, by the way, as long as we're talking about the build number, I'm looking at my Windows 8 here.
Build.
Yeah. And I see something
8400 or something.
Well, let me look. I have to pull up desktop to see it. I can never.
What is?
I'm so bad at finding these on the start menu. Where did my desktop button go? There. Oh, that's right. It's black because I chose a black desktop. It's 8400. But look at this.
Yeah.
Windows release preview with Media Center.
Right, because you installed Media Center.
Yeah.
So it just changed it. Yeah.
That's weird.
Right. So. In the shipping version of Windows 8, the low-end version, the core version, is called Windows 8. And the version you're running is actually called Windows 8 Pro. But when you install Windows Media Center, it becomes Windows 8 with Windows Media Center, or Windows 8 with Media Center.
Even though there is no SKU.
Windows 8 Pro.
with Media Center. Well, but there's no SKU like that.
This would read Windows 8 Pro with Media Center once the final version is out.
Right.
Because that combination of software is considered a slightly different thing.
By the way, we have it now from the chat room, Mary Jo, that Fedora 17's code name is Beefy Miracle. Hence.
I knew somebody was going to know.
And just when I thought no one could out-Google Google.
Yeah. Oh, no. We have a crack team here in the chat room. That's these guys know everything. Yeah. Everything. Anyway, do we know? So they're debating the build number. So what, shouldn't it be 8888?
Yeah, so 8600 would be a choice. 8800 is a choice. They always artificially increment
the
build.
Right, they make it a magic number.
The actual RTM build number is going to be in the 85 something range.
Right.
But they don't want it to be 8517. They want it to be
something
8600, yeah. 8800, maybe 88.
No, I got to say it should be 8888, and I'll tell you why.
Should.
In the Chinese culture, the luckiest number is 8.
You know, I'm speaking off the top of my head, but I believe Windows 98 second edition was build 2222, wasn't it? Like for version 2, because it was released 2, I think so.
8888 would be good.
There's precedent for this.
And as we know, the China market is huge for Microsoft going forward. Chinese version. I don't know. Actually, chat room, tell me, is it just China or is it Asia in general that 8 is considered a lucky number? I know it's considered lucky in China. Windows 95 was 950, build 950.
Yeah, that's right. Also artificially bumped up.
Mm-hmm.
They do this all the time. They do this for every version.
What about...
They do this for 7.
Oh, I guess they can't do 8088. They've already passed 8400. It'd be fun if it were 8088, though.
Yeah.
In a tribute to the original PC microprocessor. Sure. Yeah.
But we have some more dates, Leo.
More dates!
Just out.
Yes.
So these are whisper dates. These are the whisper dates. And these are from one source of mine who has been very good in the past, so I feel pretty comfortable putting them out there. He shared with me an internal thing that showed all the stuff Microsoft's got coming in the fall, right? So we already know Windows 8, October 26th, and that's also, they're going to RTM it sometime in the next week or two, as Paul is saying. Windows Server, same schedule. Visual Studio, pretty much the same schedule, although this person's telling me September, you won't be able to get your hands on those bits till September for some reason. Visual Studio. Two of the people most interested in, Windows Phone 8 and the new Office. So he says the internal word is Windows Phone 8 RTM in September. That's for the Apollo operating system, the Windows Phone 8 operating system. And GA is November for the first phones.
Interesting.
So this is the same as the last two versions, right? September RTM.
Yeah.
Okay.
Office 15, he says, gets added to the Microsoft price list in October this year. What? RTMs in November, general availability in February 2013. That all jibes pretty much with dates I've been hearing around. So, yeah, I think those dates are sounding very...
But not with March. We had May.
I know.
May. So.
Yeah. There was a rumor last week about May might be general availability for Office 15, but it seems like it's not that late.
I mean, looking at the release they have out now, the customer preview, it seems close. Right. This doesn't seem like something that's a year away. No, it seems like something not. That's months away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm excited.
Yeah. So it's going to be a really crazy fall. When you look at all those dates, it's like, oh, man, just launch after launch after launch.
Like a tick, Leo.
Like a tick.
Paul is just engorged.
Yep.
Engorged with Microsoft goodness. This is interesting, and I think this makes sense. Now, you know, Microsoft's Windows keyboards have a Windows key, and I guess you have to keep that because on Windows 8, you hit the Windows key to get back to the start screen. But you've heard that they maybe also have a Charms key, which I think is a very good idea.
Yeah, this was a weird... Did you see this, Paul? This was a weird leak screenshot thing that nobody said was real. It was from somewhere in Czechoslovakia.
Oh, well, it can't be real then. There is no Czechoslovakia, for one thing.
Oh, right.
I don't understand what I'm looking at, though. It looks like something, a footrest. This is a Windows footrest.
Yeah, I know. Somebody else, is that a foot pedal?
That's how you'll power your Windows machine, much like you used to power one of those sewing machines from the 1800s.
Press down. Yeah.
It does look like a foot pedal.
It does.
Yeah. So that's a mouse? What is that?
Yeah, that's like some kind of a
that's
wedge.
That's not ergonomic. That's wrong. It's just wrong.
I didn't think this was real until one of our reporters over at ZDNet said these actually showed up on a Best Buy site.
Oh,
these two pictures.
Right. Oh, interesting.
With prices, so they could be real. I'm not saying for sure they're real, but they could be real.
They look.
What if these are just fake pictures
that just
hide
there?
Real
right. They look like mini conveyor belts, like little mice conveyor belts.
Yeah. Maybe it's the world's smallest aerobic trainer.
That's what I think it is for your mouse.
It's a treadmill
and
for a
bait. These are wireless, apparently. I don't see any cords.
Yeah. Well, really, that's quite a leap, Leo. It appears to be Bluetooth based.
I'm guessing Bluetooth.
You know, I think that's a European layout.
The Wedge mobile keyboard, as well as a Wedge mobile mouse.
People have asked, you know, the Surface keyboards have those special Windows 8 keys.
They do have Charms keys on those Surface.
And I think it's logical to assume Microsoft makes standalone keyboards. They're going to have those things. Yeah. They're going to make mice that have gestures built in. And
that, you know what? That would go a long way towards fixing my discomfort with Windows 8. Because to me, part of the problem is this kind of non-discoverability of these magic gestures.
Actually, yeah, you've hit on a pet peeve of mine. I don't mind things changing. I agree that the Windows 8 new stuff, which I'm now used to, so I really got to kind of disassociate with that. It's not easily discoverable. Mm-hmm. And I think that things that you find by mistake is not something that connotes good user experience necessarily, right? So that's something I certainly agree with.
Although there's a lot of delight for me as an enthusiast in finding things like that. And so it's really been fun, as you've told me, for instance, on the start menu, just to start typing and things will launch. That's so much fun, you know? I just like the idea I could just type CMD and hit return. And
because you see that and you think, wow, they thought this through a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is maybe something a normal person wouldn't do. And
Well, once you do it, I mean, the first time you do it, then it's no problem. You get it. Oh, okay, that works, you know?
Sure.
So, and I am now again, my total experience with Office with a Windows 8 has been on a keyboard and a big screen. So,
yeah. Well, by the way, 99% of mine has been as well.
But then that's how a lot of people are going to be using it.
But
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I'm, you know, tablet might be completely different.
We'll see. You know, I it's possible that the computing world of a year from now looks very different from the one of today. I mean,
it's going to.
I am curious about that.
We now know it will.
Yeah.
And and you and I may only debate what the final outcome will be, what the end game looks like. But it's certainly going to be different.
Well, I it's not even something I would debate. I would just, it's more of a wait and see kind of thing.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be some mix of, you know, Android, iOS, Windows. And what that mix is, I guess
exactly.
We'll see.
Exactly. You know, and Microsoft's making a bid to be in that pack.
That's all. That's because that's the world of tomorrow.
That's where
and it's
going.
A bigger world. You know, Microsoft dominated the PC industry, and people will say, "Oh, what if they're only 1/3 of this future computing market? That's a step down." No, that market is much bigger,
right?
Much bigger than the PC market. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I honestly don't have an opinion about it. I have no idea. I mean, I'm always wrong when I guess about market trends.
As am I. So.
That's not my.
Don't be listening. Don't be listening to me and Paul. Mary Jo, what do you think? That's what's coming.
Never.
I'm always wrong too. I admit it.
It's very. You know, I think people don't understand.
No, I'm wrong. I'm wrong more than you are, Mary Jo.
Part of our job is prediction, prognostication, opinion about what this means and what it looks like and how people are going to react. But it's very hard to predict anything in technology.
I don't like. See, people misunderstand my prediction skills because, you know, my site is sort of like the future of Windows today, but it's not like. Paul sees the future. Woo. You know, I'm writing about the stuff that's coming down the pike.
Right.
It doesn't mean I have like a magic eight ball or something.
No.
You
have good sources and you know what's happening.
I have sources.
That's what this show is that. I mean, that's what this show is what's coming in Windows. We're not talking about whether you're doing today. We're talking about what you will be doing tomorrow.
Nobody cares what you're doing today, you silly little fool with your keyboard and your mouse.
That's a different show. And actually, you know, I wouldn't mind doing, and in fact, I think there'd be a real market for a show about how to use Windows today.
Yes, absolutely.
But we don't do that.
No. And I would mock that show. You should start that show.
That's just so Paul can mock it.
Oh, you're still using Windows 7?
You
1.3 billion people.
For a while, it was this show because remember, before Windows 8, after Vista, we had a year or two that all we could do was talk about Windows 7. You did Windows 7 tips. And
it was a tough year, Leo.
Windows today.
That's like going into maintenance mode, you know?
Yeah, no, it is. I agree. I'd much rather talk about what's coming and debate it. Now, here's an interesting bit. Microsoft has hired a pollster. This is the CEO of Burstyn Marsteller, so he's more than a pollster. He's a very well-known PR fella. But he's also the CEO of a polling firm, Mark Penn, and he's going to be Corporate Vice President for Strategic and Special Products. What does that mean?
Yes, explain yourself.
This guy supposedly is going to report straight to Steve Ballmer, and he's going to be advising them on consumer launches, which makes sense given what we just talked about, right?
Do you think he's going to be actively polling and or somehow researching this?
I don't know. You know, he also was part of Hillary Clinton's campaign at one point.
I know the name Mark Penn very well.
Yeah.
He was her campaign manager, wasn't that? I think he was.
He may have been.
Yeah.
He was dismissed from her campaign
over
something. But yeah, so I'm curious what they're going to do with this guy and why they're bringing him in and having him report directly to Ballmer. Like, what is he going to do? Is he going to do polls? Is he going to give them trend data that they're going to incorporate? I'm not really sure what he's going to do.
It was controversial because he was running her campaign and he was a pollster. I seem to remember.
That's right.
And so that was somewhat controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, he ran Ed Koch's mayoral campaign in 1977 and 85. He ran Menachem Begin's campaign for Prime Minister of Israel in 1981.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty sure Begin and Cox were, in fact, the same human being. So. probably not surprising.
Yeah, but look at his list of clients he's done.
Bill
he's
Clinton,
represented Ford,
yep,
Merck,
yep,
Intel, McDonald's. Yeah.
He conducted polls during the Monica Lewinsky scandal to help the administration craft its response to the impeachment proceedings. Then he went to work for Hillary Clinton, ran her senatorial and presidential campaigns. He used the word cocaine on MSNBC's Hardball in response to questions about Barack Obama's admission of drug use.
Oh, jeez.
And that got him in a little bit of heat, hot water. He had to step down when he met with representatives of Colombia's government to help promote a free trade agreement that Clinton opposed. You know, this is obviously a very smart guy who's run campaigns, and I think that's telling. This is a campaign, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Microsoft really needs to be very aggressive in promoting this, and I think that this is a PR guy who's going to come in and craft Microsoft's. They need this.
They do. They kind of do. Yep.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, because you know the people who they have. I mean, there are some very savvy consumer PR people at Microsoft too. They've done Xbox and Kinect and all that. But I mean, there are people who have more chops around the enterprise than consumer at Microsoft. So this would be a nice addition, I think.
It's we've talked a lot about how poorly sometimes their PR is handled. So this is what they need. The EU, and we'll do a couple of quickies and we'll get our picks of the week because we're running out of time. The EU investigating Microsoft on antitrust fronts. What's new?
What's this? Jeez. All right, so we're gonna need an hour for this one.
No. Just use sleep.
There are two things, right? There's this is so awesome. Microsoft in 2009 agreed to add the browser ballot box to Windows 7 in Europe.
Horrible.
They agreed to do it.
They did it.
In February 2011. They released an update to Windows 7 Service Pack 1 that apparently stopped delivering that update. And I guess no one noticed. It's been like a year and a half. And the EU can now fine them up to, I believe, $7 billion. I think it's something like 10% of their annual revenue as a result. And we'll see what happens. Microsoft amazingly admitted that it happened and apologized. I mean, immediately.
So it was an accident?
Apparently.
How could that be an accident? Come on.
Wow. Well, I don't understand how does no one notice this? I mean,
nobody knows.
I don't know. So there's some evidence
like
now.
20
that
million people.
For 15 months. Yeah. That just shows you nobody wanted this stupid thing in the first place.
I don't think anyone really cared, but
yeah,
that's still crazy. That's crazy. That's humorous. The other one is the EU is now going to investigate over Windows 8 and RT and the allegations that Google and Mozilla made earlier about two different things. One is that none of them can create a desktop version of their browsers on Windows RT. And the other one is that even though Microsoft is allowing third parties to make Metro versions of their browsers that will run on both, none of those can have all of the full functionality that IE has, because Microsoft has apparently, again, according to these companies, reserved some private APIs for themselves. And, you know, both of these two things, when you put them together, this is like Microsoft from like 1999, you know, it's like, this is like old school Microsoft. I'm kind of, I guess we'll see what happens, but it's interesting. And yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's so out of tune with Microsoft of today. I don't even know how to react.
It's an oversight.
Well, I think that one about the browser complaints around Windows RT based machines, that one may have some legs. Unless something changes.
Microsoft's not going to back down. That's Metro.
They're either doing these things or they're not, right? So if IE Metro has features and functionality that no third party can duplicate because Microsoft is not releasing those APIs, I mean, that's a fact or it's not. And if it is a fact, I believe that Microsoft has one of the things they got charged with in the EU was withholding APIs documentation from their competitors. And remember, that was a big thing, the quality of the documentation. And, you know, actually, that might have been the U.S. Was that the U.S. or Europe? It might have been both. I don't remember anyway.
Yeah, I think both. I think so.
It's hard to keep it all straight. Yeah. But it's very reminiscent of previous antitrust charges against Microsoft, so which I think was part of the point of the complaint, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you fill out a template now. You know, Microsoft antitrust complaint, you know, how were you abused? Lack of documentation and APIs. You know,
show us where they touched you on this doll.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Click here. Yeah, click here where they didn't provide documentation.
It really is a form at this point.
It is. It's just a
Let's see. You know, there's two big things that we haven't talked about, and we really probably should. One is Microsoft will announce its quarterly earnings later today, right?
Very soon, right?
Very soon.
Any minute now.
Yep.
I guess we should just keep going. 1 o'clock our time, 15 minutes from now. Right after the market closes.
So I guess the question is whether this Aquantive write-off is going to erase all of their profits.
$6 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of, you know, oversights, you know.
Whose idea was that?
It's like, actually, you know, the company that could lose $6 billion in Aquantive, it's probably not surprising that that same company turned off a ballot browser box thing and, you know, didn't notice.
So, Paul, do you understand why I might have asserted on Sunday that Microsoft was the worst run company since RIM? Do you understand?
Leo, do you understand that I actually didn't disagree with that assertion?
You know, I mean, that's overstatement. That's a hyperbole.
It's a generality. I understand. No,
but there you could point to quite a few things that just like, what?
Yeah.
And Aquantive was one of those things that was a knee-jerk reaction, frankly.
Oh, no, listen, I did this. I went back and I looked at the news article I wrote when they did this, and I said, no one has ever heard of this company, and the only reason they bought them is because they didn't get DoubleClick, and this is their DoubleClick.
Exactly right.
And what Microsoft doesn't understand is that this company is not DoubleClick,
right?
And this is never going to work out like DoubleClick would have, and there you go, Aquantive.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And what a shock that they lost $6 billion. It's like Yahoo buying Broadcast.com.
I'm surprised they didn't. It seems like there should be an accounting way to kind of burnt this out over 2 years or something.
You have a coffee can somewhere? We could just,
you know. I mean, like, why would you take, it's bizarre that they would take this massive loss. Wow. It makes me wonder, and here's a little conspiracy theory for you. Why are they doing this right now? Like, why do this?
Get it out of the way.
Well, but maybe they're trying to hide something else. You know, in other words, this quarter is like a total loss, apparently. So is there some other bad news they're kind of sweeping under the carpet with this thing? It's like maybe no one will notice that, you know, Windows didn't do so good this quarter right before Windows 8 shipped because, hey, Aquantive was $6 billion worth of.
So you mean they may have chosen this quarter. You're going to have to parse.
Why do you have to write it off all at once? I mean, wouldn't you normally
Let me get Lisa in here. She can explain the accounting principles involved. There may be, no, seriously.
Lisa, how do you hide money?
When we here at Twit, when we lose $6 billion, we try to spread it out. No, there may be reasons. I don't know. Because, I mean, this is technology. There may be, not technology. Yeah. It's accounting is complicated. I've learned. Incredibly.
Math is hard.
It's more than math. It's tax law. It's mostly tax law.
Does it require a pivot table, Leo? Does it? Is it an OLAP cube?
Oh, it's a pivot table, baby. It's not a write-off. It's a write-down.
Ooh,
first of all,
there you go.
Very important.
See?
The question is, why do you take the write down
in one giant lump
now instead of saying, can we write it down over 3 years?
It's like opening the door and the log swings by and hits you in the head.
Right.
You know, like, why can't it just be a bunch of little bites?
And it could be. Ray in our chat room says maybe they want to do this now so that next quarter when they'll have Windows 8, they'll have Surface. Well, that won't be next quarter. 2 quarters from now.
Yeah, it won't actually. Well, the quarter ends in October, right?
Is that right? It'll be too early to show the results, I think.
Yeah.
I guess they could take the pre-orders.
Maybe. But well, certainly we'll 2 quarters from now, they might have a big bump, and it will sure look great.
Next year is going to look awesome.
Next year will look. Mm-hmm. I think it has a lot to do with.
Q4 next year is going to be blockbuster.
And then Dr. Mom, who is a physician but knows everything, points out that if they write it off now, they could take the loss this year. Maybe they made a lot of money this year. You know, I certainly do that. If I made a lot of money this year, I'd write off the laptop this year rather than next year, right?
Of course.
It's technical.
Yeah. That's why I don't understand it. I'm nodding along and I'm agreeing in all the right places, but I have no idea what you just said.
But we will, after the bell, in a few minutes, the parsing begins, and I guarantee you there'll be little lines in
this
there.
This is going to be a bizarre one, because even if they make money, it's going to say something along the lines of, Microsoft today announced they made $111 on revenues of $16 billion. It's going to be something like that.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a crazy juxtaposition of numbers.
And the other big story, which we haven't mentioned, we certainly spent a lot of time on other shows talking about it, on Monday, Marissa Meyer, this huge shock, became CEO of Yahoo.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people probably don't know who she is, though.
Well, she's the 20th employee at Google, the first female engineer at Google, was very well known as the person who was responsible for the Google search page for many years, was the one who kept it clean, simple, straightforward, was recently, and I think this has something to do with it, last year when Larry Page took over as CEO, he took five guys and made them the executive committee. Even though she was senior enough to be on that team, she was not invited to be on that team and was in fact moved from search to local. And some said, I said, that seems like a little bit of a slap in the face. And maybe it was, because here she is leaving Google after 13 years.
Who would you compare her to at Microsoft, Mary Jo? Like, what? How big of a loss is that? In other words, someone who was really core. Is it like Paul Merritt's leaving? I mean, what would have been like this?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say
Brad,
it's like
Silverberg, sure. That kind of guy.
Yeah.
Well, but the deal is Marissa Meyer was for a long time the face of Google.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's somebody very public.
It's almost like Sinofsky leaving.
Even bigger than that. It's huge.
Yeah. It's gigantic.
So, however, she had been kind of on the outs, I believe.
Yeah.
And had, you know, for instance, we never saw her at Google I.O. this year. In the past, she was the one who took the stage. So I think there's something to be said for she might have hit a glass ceiling or might have been on the outs at Google. Mm-hmm. But she was never
It looks like Google's not so different after all.
Yeah, she was never on the list of candidates for Yahoo. In fact, Mike Garrington wrote a great article in which he said Yahoo probably didn't even have the guts to ask her. She must have called them. And what a great challenge to take a company that's in deep trouble but has some very strong assets and turn it around would be – she's 37 – she's a young person.
If she
person.
Could turn she's around Yahoo, this would be a corporate turnaround on the order of what Jobs did at Apple.
Exactly.
Exactly.
What a time to do this. You know, this is somebody saying, all right, I'm going to take the biggest challenge in technology right now. Well,
I like the idea that she's younger, too. I mean, a lot of the guys that they might have hired for this, I don't know that, you know, that they.
They don't need another old white man. That's what went wrong.
Yeah. Not that the last guy was an old guy, but I mean. I think a lot of the people they might have looked at were, you know, obviously industry veteran types who had become sort of venture capitalists almost. And I think they needed someone who actually has the energy to get up and go to work every day and is still very much involved in what's going on. You know,
I think it's very exciting. And it's relevant to this show because Microsoft and Yahoo are very close.
Yeah, right? I know. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And there, I think it was Danny Sullivan this morning speculating, like, you know, this could go a lot of different interesting ways. He wrote something on Search Engine Land saying, you know, what if she decides maybe Google would be a better partner for Yahoo than Microsoft.
Here's what's going to happen. I see now an axis of evil against Google. I see Microsoft.
Leo, by definition, those are the allies.
The allies. What am I saying? Google's the axis.
I don't know what that was.
You're the historian, Paul.
Just want to make sure.
The allies.
You understand.
It's not Mussolini, Hitler. I'm sorry. I was completely wrong. It's Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin. Well, Stalin will debate. But I think this is what I think you might see, which would be very interesting. Google, everybody wants to isolate Google. Microsoft does, Yahoo does, Facebook does, and Apple does. What if those four, we already see Apple using Facebook in its iOS. Yahoo and Facebook have buried the hatch. Remember, Yahoo was suing Facebook. They're now partners.
Yeah, they're all like etching Google out.
That's what I see. I see an allied offensive
on the other
Google.
Hand. Her going to Yahoo and then pulling in Google would be like, I don't know, Stephen Elop leaving Microsoft, going to Nokia, and then pulling in Microsoft there.
Yeah.
Could be could go that way. Is that what Danny's saying will happen?
Yeah, he also threw in the Apple wildcard too in his piece. But you know, New York Times interviewed Marissa Meyer this week, and she said she considered the Microsoft Bing Yahoo partnership to be a positive for Yahoo, which is interesting that she said that because Yahoo announced earnings this week, and the fact that Microsoft isn't generating the right revenue per search number for them yet is still hurting Yahoo.
Yahoo doesn't have search anymore.
Marissa Maya does not understand math. I think that's what I said. But yes.
I don't think you're going to hear anything of any meaning from Marissa Meyer for some time.
Right.
She has in her head somewhere, maybe it's on a legal pad, a plan. I'm sure she wouldn't have gone
there. A not bad outcome for Yahoo would be think about this.
Yeah.
Is, you know, Google has started out as a very simple company, simple products, you know, kind of Unix-like simplicity notions, and now they're kind of all over the map.
Yeah.
Even though Larry Page came in and said we're going to cut down on all the projects and stuff, then they released this dumb orb thing that kind of competes with Google TV. And I don't know, you know, what if she remade Yahoo?
That's what's going to happen.
As a simpler Google. Precisely. As Google the way it was supposed to be.
Precisely.
Or the way it was originally intended.
That's exactly what's going to happen. And she's going to have business partnerships with Microsoft, Facebook, and Apple. You couldn't get three bigger players.
In other words, we don't have to do everything. We'll just do some things and we'll do that stuff great. And then we'll partner on Exactly. You never know. I just a thought.
The real question, we talked about this yesterday on This Week in Google, the real question is, does she see Yahoo as a content company or a web services company?
Well, yes, of course.
It can't be both, I don't think. Yeah. So pick one, and I would guess she'll pick web services. And that becomes very interesting. I think
Rob is good. Well, you know, Yahoo is a destination. I mean, that might be the one big differentiator between Yahoo and Google, really. I mean, I think a lot of people go to Google to get something done. And obviously, Google's goal is to retain those people, which is why they're doing more and more stuff. But Yahoo is, in many ways, the destination. You know, people go there for news and sports.
If I were Google, I'd be a little nervous. Because she knows more about Google than anybody except Larry Page.
Plus, she's scorned.
Yeah, she's the woman scorned. Let's not say woman, but she's the executive scorned. I don't think she does a deal with Google.
Leo, she can hear us. But they're dangerous when they're scorned.
I agree. Look, I was thrown out. I was booted out of Tech TV, and I did everything I could to recreate it somewhere else better. And I understand that mentality, and I think that's a completely legitimate motivating force.
Yes, young and motivated. That's dangerous. Dangerous.
And I mean, it's a challenge, you know, but if anybody could do it, this is a really interesting move for Yahoo. I'm very excited. And once again, understand, folks, all we really care about is it a great story that we can write about for years to come? we don't really care about anything else.
A car crash or victory, otherwise? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No, it matters. I'd like to see Yahoo survive. And I like the notion of a Yahoo that's a partner with other companies that do other things better than they do too. I don't like a lot of what I don't like about Google is their complete lack of direction.
Yep.
You know,
it's a real opportunity.
Yeah, we'll see.
Real opportunity here. And a couple of other quickies. The Lumia, I was surprised, 400 million Lumias sold.
Oh, yeah. So actually, before we get to that, yes. You know, I had written this in the notes a couple of days ago before they announced their earnings, right? I was a little shocked. You know, they have a price cut on this Lumia 900. It started out at only $99, which was already kind of a fire sale. And then they dropped it to $50,
you know.
And the sort of negative reaction to that blows my mind. It's similar to the negative reaction they had for the price originally, right? Remember when the phone first came out, people were like, $99, that's too low. It's like the home run. It's too high. You know, like, I don't understand why, you know, it devalues the Windows Phone brand. You know, there were all these weird arguments about that. You know, the New York Times story about this event said right off the bat, it said, a lot of people think that this is really bad. They're cutting and running, you know. And then they said, even though AT&T told us that this price cut followed the exact same schedule of their best-selling phone, the Samsung Galaxy S2 or whatever it was from last year. Like, it's the way they discount things. It's just a completely normal process, which, of course, Nokia came out and said the same thing. And so before the earnings announcement, I had kind of been bothered by the reaction to this price cut, because to me, it just is like, you know, we're halfway between launch and the next version of Windows Phone. I mean, this would be the time to do it. Obviously, you want sales to continue. You're going to get a new class of customer at $50, and people who don't care that you can't upgrade to Windows Phone 8, fine, you know. But then they announced their earnings, which, of course, were horrific. But it's amazing to me that some people are able to not even highlight the fact that there were some interesting little bits of good news in there, you know. For all of the – I mean, obviously, they're doing this transition. It's going horribly. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, Lumia sales, which are not even – a tiny percentage of what Apple or Samsung sells every quarter, have still risen 200% two quarters in a row now. I mean, they went from 0 to 1 million to 2 million to 4 million. I mean, they've sold 7 million of these things. It's not nothing. I mean, it's, you know.
7 million total?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's
not
4
bad.
4 million for the quarter. So, yeah, it was double the last quarter, I think.
It's sort of like the Windows Phone market share numbers, which we didn't put in here. You know, 1 year ago, or at the end of 2011, they had 2% of the market. The projection now for this year is that they're going to have 4% of the market. There's two ways you can look at that. You could hear 4% and say, 4%, that's terrible. But then you could look at it and say, yeah, but that's a 100% jump in market share. Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, as I used to argue about the Mac back in the day, it's very easy to grow market share when your number is small and very hard to grow it when you're big. I mean, doubling your market share is possible when you only have 2% market share, but I mean, but they're also doing it. So it's not terrible. It's not 10% like we might want, but it's still growth. I mean, I don't understand why all the negativity around that kind of stuff, you know, or why just people ignore that kind of stuff. You know, I think, as you were joking about Yahoo, where all we really want to do is report it, I think it's unfortunately true in the tech blogosphere or tech news, you know, they look for the big headline story, Nokia loses gajillion dollars.
Right. It's easier to report that stuff than the nuanced stuff.
Than that they have more cash on hand now than they did a quarter ago.
Right.
Or that, you know, the sales of these things are actually going up. You know, that kind of thing. It bothers me with the Lumia 900 in particular, because I know the phone is great and like it, and we just talked about this. And it's like the vast right-wing conspiracy.
Right.
You know, like, people really want to dump on this thing. And I don't – have you used one? I mean, really? I it's a beautiful phone.
It's a great phone. No, it's gorgeous.
It's bothersome to me that it's like that. It's too bad.
And I like
the, meanwhile, though, RIM is going down the toilet.
There's nothing to do about RIM.
Yeah, right. We can't save
it. Hey, we got to move because we're almost out of time. Yep. Let me do the Audible pick, and then okay. We will get a software pick tip, an enterprise pick, codename pick, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But first, a word from our friends at audible.com. You know, I probably shouldn't have to say much about Audible. They're a great audio bookstore, the best. 100,000-plus titles in every possible category, fiction and nonfiction. Paul and I like to listen to history, but there's also great thrillers Paul's a big fan of. I love the sci-fi there. I mean, really, Audible is fantastic. And if you go to audible.com/windows right now, you can sign up for the gold account. That'll give you a book a month, which I think is a very good start. And your first month's free, which means your first book is free. You can cancel at any time, pay nothing, but you get to keep the book. So we always like to do an Audible pick. And here's your chance, Paul Thurrott, to recommend an Audible book for our fans.
So if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've heard the name Alan First. He's written a ton of great books, almost all of which take place in the years right before World War II in Europe. And they're, you know, spy thrillers and so forth. And
I love them.
Yeah. So his latest book, which I'm queuing up for this trip, actually, is Mission to Paris. It's about a Hollywood actor who goes to Europe in 1938 and gets involved in, you know, basically a spy thriller. So anything by Alan First is fantastic.
Are these,
so.
Now, it looks like they're in a series. Is that right or
you
not?
Know, no, not really. I don't know why they list them like that. I think the first book in the series might have been Night Soldiers or Ghosts of Warsaw.
Right.
Or those books. But it's...
You can read any of them in any order?
Yeah. Okay. And because they are so historically accurate, it's really interesting. You can look this up online. A lot of people have tried to pick apart these stories, or they look at the descriptions he has of like cars or, you know, the way things were.
He's actually writing from the
40s. Might actually be a time traveler.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm fascinated by the whole World War II thing. I haven't mentioned it that much, but I'll just throw that one out there. And there's
really?
Something about these books. Yeah, I know. There's something about these books that they feel of that era. It's like, you know, Mad Men. Like, I wasn't alive as an adult in the 1960s, but I watch Mad Men and I think, wow, this is like what it must have been like. And, you know,
I wasn't an adult, but I remember it. And it's exactly... I can feel the texture of the woolly couch in their living room. I know that couch.
You were scratched by that.
By that couch. Yeah. It is. It's the verisimilitude is amazing.
Yeah, and these have that same vibe where you just feel like they're, you know, they're made up stories.
Yep.
But they take place in a historically accurate time period, and everything in it is accurate.
And he's a very good writer, I have to say.
And he's a fantastic writer. Yep. And there have been there are different. This is a series of books called The Tourists that are pretty good by a different writer. His name is escaping me. They're similar in some ways to this stuff, take place more modern. Or even some of the, you could go back to like the Bourne books, the actual books, not like the movies, but the books, like Hooray type stuff. You know, it's all in there, but this is something special about Alan First. So this is one I have not actually yet read. Like I said, I got it ready to go for the trip, but I'm looking forward.
It's interesting you should pick this because my next book that I've got queued up is Night Soldiers. I thought, well, I'm going to go back and start at the beginning. I'm relieved to know that it doesn't really matter, but I'd read something from the middle, and so I thought, well.
There's something special. Night Soldiers might be, is that the best one?
It's hard to remember. It's the first one, I think.
I think it is the first one. Spies of War. So
they say book one in the Night Soldiers series. Right?
It might have just been the first one he wrote.
Yeah.
These are not.
There's quite a few.
Yeah, I've read several of these. Spies of Warsaw.
Yeah. I read Blood of Victory, and I loved it. I loved it. So, I'm look at all of these. This is great. Spies of Warsaw. Yeah. And now I have to say the early ones are narrated by George Guidall, who is one of my favorite narrators at Audible. That's the other thing. The books are great. But they also, these are not just some dry voice. It's not like the Kindle reading this to you. These are really great actors who bring these books to life. So I highly recommend you check it out. Audible.com/windows, the newest Mission to Paris. Could be your free book, but you know what? There's 100,000 to choose from. Do try it today. You will love it. We continue on with Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and his tip and software of the week. It's all together, into one.
We kind of walked through this a little bit earlier, but you know, Microsoft has released this customer preview version of Office 2013, and confusingly, unless you look really hard, it looks like you have to get Office 365 to get it. And the reason that's confusing is because people hear Office 365, they think online services and so forth.
Right.
The home premium version of Office 365 is really just Office. It's Office connected to the cloud, but you use SkyDrive. And I strongly recommend, if you're trying this, to try one of those versions, the Office 365 versions, because they give you that ability to see what this integration is like and how cool it is to do that. Click to run type install, run Office apps on demand. You can run it side by side with your existing version of Office. Really just the kind of way to go.
The really useful tip that Paul walked me through earlier was when you go to this consumer preview page.
So if you click sign up.
Oh, I clicked learn more.
I know, because we were just walking through some of the stuff.
Okay, so click sign up.
If you go to this is a little different, actually.
Well, that's because I'm already signed in, I think.
I see, okay.
And then click try now.
it should give you a choice. It should go to that column page with the three. And if it doesn't, right, we'll just go back. But okay. Yeah. Okay. It's home. So click on that arrow and see if you have a choice of different. Oh yeah. So if you had
learn more click of, learn more.
Yeah, you can try the different versions.
Now you get the three versions, and the one you suggest. So,
well, I think, you know, for individuals, I think it makes sense just to try the home version.
That's
the thing you need to understand is that what's on the back end of this is going to be your what we used to call Windows Live. You know, it's Hotmail, SkyDrive, that kind of stuff. The small business version, the enterprise version, you start moving up now through various versions of what we now think of as Office 365 with hosted versions of Exchange and SharePoint Link and so forth. And if you're not, certainly, obviously, you could try it. But I mean, if you're not really going to be buying something like this, it may not make sense to try that now. And if you have to, you can still download the traditional installer. And so if you actually go back, if you don't mind, in the bottom right of that page, it says servers and more. And if you click there.
Try.
And
then
scroll
you get
down.
SharePoint, Exchange, Link, Office Web App Server.
But right at the bottom is
Office Professional Plus.
This looks and works, the installer that is, exactly like it does in Office 2010.
Right.
It's just the regular installer. And so if that's all you want, you can certainly do that. But again, I think the big benefit to this, the thing that's going to pull you over to it, is going to be the awesome, you know, online services integration stuff. And so my tip is to try that, but my pick is, you know, whatever, any version of Office 2013, of course.
Now, I did it on Windows 8. This works fine on Windows 7, right? I mean, you don't.
Yeah. A lot of people have written about this, by the way, or written and asked me about this. It does not work on XP or Vista. And, of course, some people on Vista are saying, well, I don't understand, you know, why doesn't this work on Vista? And I don't know why, but I guess I would just say this is a huge change to Office, in that it's, if you think back to say something like Office for Windows 95, which obviously was aimed at Windows 95, that would have run on NT, I believe, at the time, but it wasn't going to run on Windows 3.1. I mean, this one is optimized for Windows 8 ultimately, and it will run fine on Windows 7, of course. But
do run it on Windows 8 if you can.
If you can,
that's where you're going to see the best.
I like to have as little production software in my system as possible. So you run like a pre-release version of Windows 8 with a pre-release version of Office 2013. Against pre-release versions of the online services. It's really kind of the perfect combination. And so nothing will ever go wrong there. But, you know, I think people who listen to this podcast or read our websites or whatever, by and large, should be able to handle that kind of stuff. It's not dodgy or awful. I've certainly not experienced any major issues with it so far. So
I like it. So your recommendation is try it in some way, but you can get an MSI download if you go to that server.
If you have to, really, you know, try to overcome your inhibitions.
Don't be
doing
inhibited
differently, and you know, look at the click to run stuff.
I agree. Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
It's one of your favorite words, Leo. WAAD.
WAAD.
WAAD. Windows Azure Active Directory.
Yeah,
which
baby.
We've talked about on Windows Weekly a few times before, but it's my pick of the week because they finally have got the preview build out for people who want to do some testing with this thing. So this is Active Directory hosted on Windows Azure. It's Active Directory in the cloud. Microsoft's already using it itself for Office 365, for Windows Intune, and for its CRM online products. So now you too, if you're a third-party software developer, can try using this to manage and authenticate. You can go play around with the bits. It's called a developer preview, but anybody can get it, I'm pretty sure. And download it, try it, see how your apps can plug in and use Active Directory, this new cloud Active Directory, to authenticate against. I'm going to be curious what people think of it because it's a definitely new way for Microsoft to be going with Active Directory, but an important one since, as we talked about on this episode, they're doing more and more in the cloud, so you need to have everything that's available on premises available in the cloud.
Awesome.
Yes.
And so, Microsoft's
$192 million loss. Let's let her do the code name and then we'll get the
results. We'll
we delayed long enough that we actually had.
I got excited there. I'm sorry.
Code name pick of the week is Napa. A new code name I had never heard before.
My favorite county after Sonoma. Yes.
So maybe you'll like Napa. It's the development tools for the new Office. The real name is called Office 365 Development Tools. And this is what you're going to use if you want to. Well, it's one of the things you could use, I should say. You don't have to use it, but you could use this if you want to develop these add-ins for Office 15, things like apps that are built around Access or SharePoint or any of the other Office apps. And these add-ons are kind of like complementary applets almost. They're little mini applets that you can put in the Microsoft Store for Office, since there's going to be an Office Store as well. And these add-ins were codenamed Agaves, which I think we made a previous Codename of the Week. So, yep, you can now use the Napa preview bits, which are out, to develop Agaves. There you go. Double codename bonus.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Is it what is it? What used to be called ActionScript? What is the language that you write? Or VB app or whatever? What was it?
Yeah, so there's the traditional tools for developing Office apps like Visto and VBA, all those things. Those still exist, but if you use those now to develop a new add-in for the Office suite going forward, those cannot be in the Microsoft Office Store. So you have to use either HTML5 or JavaScript or use these new tools to develop your apps if you want them to be in the store.
Got it. So you still could do VBA.
You can if you want, but it won't be in the store.
Right.
So you can hold on to the past if you want.
Well, I think a lot of those are really internal plugins for businesses that they can still do them. But mm-hmm.
Yep, they can.
Well, so the results are out, and you nailed it, Paul Thurrott. A loss for Microsoft thanks to the Aquantiv write down.
Well, you know what's interesting though? Now that I'm looking at it, it doesn't seem so horrible. You know, it's like, in other words, they had record revenues, 18 billion.
Huge
roughly.
Revenues, yeah.
35% increase. So they had, it was operating income. It's hard to even explain. I see numbers and they kind of glaze over. Yeah. So it was 6.93 billion.
That's the write down for Aquantiv.
Yep. That was the write down. But
the revenues are 18 billion for the quarter.
Yep.
At 6 cents
the
a share.
Were
$192 million loss.
Right.
Loss because of the Aquantiv write off.
Yep.
And so just from a quick look at the press release that's out, Server and Tools did well, Office Division did well. Windows and Windows Live revenues down 13% and 3% for the full year. So it's time for a new version of Windows.
Yeah, but if you look at the thing is, if you adjusting for the impact of the Windows upgrade offer, Windows only declined 1%. And so they're actually holding off income for the people who are upgrading, getting the Windows 8 upgrade.
Yep.
Okay.
Online services income up, but still they get the anchor hanging around their head of that, of all the money they're investing in Bing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. We'll talk more next week on Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is, of course, the main guy at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And together they form the team.
The Super Twins.
The Super Twins.
The superheroes.
On Windows Weekly.
Activate, we got to interpret our rings together or something. Form of a bucket of water. Why do I always get the water thing? What is that? I would like to be an ice chip.
You ought to see what happens when Mary Jo interacts with a priest. That's on This Week in Enterprise Tech on Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC. Mary Jo Foley, part of our new Enterprise show, which you must watch. We'll be back here every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC for Windows Weekly. Now, you're not leaving yet for France, Paul. You're leaving in 2 weeks.
Well, actually, I'm leaving a week from tomorrow, so I'll be here next week.
Next week, and then
the following week, I'll be in France.
He'll be in the Eiffel Tower doing the show.
And that following week is the week that Mary Jo is going to be in St. Louis.
Well, yeah. There we go.
August, whatever that is, 2nd or 3rd.
So it'll be a fun couple of shows.
It will.
Yeah.
This was a great show. Thank you, guys. A really fascinating discussion.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. We thank you for joining us, everybody. Remember, you can watch live, or we always make on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/WW. Or, of course, wherever podcasts are stored and forwarded, like the Zoom marketplace.
Wherever podcasts are streamed or downloaded.
Streamed for downloads. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Did you see, Paul, that Windows Weekly was cited by The Verge?
Yes, I did.
Credited by The Verge.
And I complained to him because he wrote a story about that. And he thought I was being a jerk. But I said, Tom, we know each other. All you had to do was ping me on Messenger. You could have gotten an exclusive quote and you could have gotten the full story. But instead, you just listened to the podcast and you blurted out what I said on the podcast. I mean, like, you could have had a great story. But, you know, it's too bad.
Joshua Topolsky wrote me a note saying, are we okay? Do you hate me? And I said, no, yeah. We just like to give you a hard time. Of course, I love you, Joshua. In fact, that
would hate you. Would you turn around for a minute, though?
Yeah. I got a sword.
Yes.
Is Chad here yet? We should get Joshua on the show just to prove that I love him like a man.